जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन भ्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं त्वं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमः ओम विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछा कल्पतरुर्भ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एवच पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So today we are going to have a very illuminated class. So continuing with Canto 3, Chapter 32, entitled Entanglement in Fruitive Activities. So what happened yesterday? So who spoke the class yesterday? Okay. Jantu spoke for a long time. Right? So what did we see yesterday? What happened in the first section? How the various kind of sufferings, how the embryology we studied. Then we studied prayers of the child in the womb, then birth and further entanglement. Anything else? And further entanglement after it happens. Okay. So today is a very special chapter entitled Entanglement in Fruitive Activities, where Kapila Muni is kind of like summarizing his old teachings, and he's establishing the supremacy of bhakti among all the paths. So what are all the paths that we know of? Jnana, Yoga, Bhakti. Okay, more details. All the paths that you know, throw them. Karma Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Raja Yoga is, what is Raja Yoga? Huh? Ramakumaris use that term? Raja Yoga? So apparently it's used by many people. It was popularized by Swami Vivekananda. He called Ashtanga Yoga as Raja Yoga. Otherwise there is no term called Raja Yoga anywhere in the scriptures. Okay, then what else do we know? Bhakti Mishra Yoga, very good. Yoga Mishra Bhakti. Then? Bhakti Mishra Gyan. Gyan Mishra Bhakti. Huh? Bhakti Mishra Karma. Karma Mishra Bhakti. Okay. You know, sometimes in festivals, we do this cooking. So we want to make, so like one time our Leela Kirtan Prabhu is expert in making different varieties of rice. He makes some 56 varieties of rice. So how does he do that? First he makes, cooks rice, big container, he cooks rice. He puts the rice in 56 drones. Then on one rice drone, he puts little ghee, that becomes ghee rice. In another drone, he takes rice and he adds little jeera on top. Jeera ka chok, that becomes jeera rice. Then he takes pepper rice. Then coconut rice. Then curd rice. Then there is pepper coconut rice. Then there is pepper jeera rice. And he makes. But the base is rice. So what is our base? Like that. So that is what Kapila Muni is going to show today. That ultimately that foundation of bhakti is there. Everything else is just a garnishing on top. Without bhakti, none of the processes can attain perfection. They can, the culmination, the due culmination. And another two names which we missed is pravritti and nivritti margas, which is more generic term. It's not a path in itself, but a general category. So in this chapter, first, Kapila Muni, he talks about the pravritti mark, That is basically sakama karma. And how the fallacy of sakama karma he states. Then he goes to the nivritti mark, which is all the systems that we discuss is all under nivritti mark, except say bhakti mishra karma. Everything else is in the category of nivritti mark. So all this nivritti margas also culminate in, they attain perfection only if that element of bhakti is there. So that will be highlighted. Then again Kapila Muni jumps back to sakam karma and starts bashing left, right and center the sakama karma followers, and shows that even to be successful in sakama karma also you need bhakti, and how ultimately bhakti gives all perfection. And a grand summary of all the techniques, all the abhideyas is given in a series of verses. And finally the chapter concludes with like the phalastuti, describing the benefits of this whole process, who should learn this process, who should not learn this process, etc. and so forth, like that. So the Nivritti Marga section is little confusing, so we'll spend more time today in trying to understand that. Rest of the chapter is pretty straightforward. Okay, so it's starting with text number 1. Kapila Uvacha. Atha Yogriha Medhiyan धर्मान एवाव संग्रहे काममर्थम च धर्मान स्वान दोग्धि भूयापि पर्थितान.
The personality of Godhead said, the person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals, and thereby he fulfills his desire for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again he acts the same way.
Right, so here Kapila Muni is saying atha yo grihamedhiyan. So he's going to describe about the grihamedhi, right? So Prabhupada writes there are two kinds of householders. Who are they? Grihastha and grihamedhi, right? So he gives a nice comparison of the psychology of the two, right? A grihastha is the one who lives with his family, second paragraph, who lives with his family, wife, children, relatives, but has no attachment for them. He prefers to live in a family life rather than as a mendicant or sannyasi, but his chief aim is to achieve self-realization. So that's the point. So he is the one who is very focused about what he wants in life. My goal is self-realization. Yes, to facilitate that I may need an external setting of being in the company of family, wife, children, relatives and so on, but they are only a means for me in my ultimate goal of self-realization. So that is the psychology of a grihastha. But a grihamedhi is, his activity is to enjoy material benefits for performing religious rituals for economic development and thereby ultimately satisfy the senses. He does not want anything more. Basically his motive, even he follows dharma. Right? Try to understand, we are not talking about an animalistic life here. A grihamedhi also follows dharma, or at least makes a show of following dharma. But what is the intention? By the dharma I attain artha. By that artha I can fulfill my kama. That is the only purpose. Like that. So sometimes even by giving charity for pious activities, he goes to higher planetary atmosphere in the heavenly planets in his next life. But he does not want to stop the repetition of birth and death. That is the point. They do a lot of charity. They, you know, They do sadhu seva also, right? But what is the purpose? Only to attain certain, to attain more material enjoyment, like that. They are posted in good positions, and since they know that they are using up their assets of pious life, they again and again perform activities of sense gratification. That's the point. So all that positive karma, the bank balance is being exhausted, the karmic balance is being exhausted, the pap punya is being exhausted. So what do? They continue doing it again and again. That's what the bhuya pipartitan, the verse says. Bhuya is again and again. So they keep doing these sakama karma activities again and again. Like that. So then, second characteristic of these grihamedhis, next verse. Sachapi bhagavad dharmat kama mudha paran mukha यजते क्रतुभिर देवान पितृंश्च श्रद्धयान्वितः.
Such persons are ever bereft of devotional service due to being too attached to sense gratification, and therefore, although they perform various kinds of sacrifices and take great vows to satisfy the demigods and forefathers, they are not interested in Krishna consciousness devotional service.
Right, that is a problem. So what are these people? They are Bhagavad Dharmat Paran Mukha. Bhagavad Dharma is Dharma towards Bhagavan, that is devotional service. So they are Paran Mukha. They have Krishna Bahirmukh. They have turned their face away from devotional service. Why? Because they are Kama Mudha. They are blinded. Their intelligence is blinded by the desire to enjoy. And what do they do instead? If they don't do Bhagavad Dharmat, what do? Yajante, they worship Kratubhir Devan, they all the Devas and Pitri, forefathers and the demigods, with great Shraddha Dhyanvita, with great faith, they do this like that. So, Prabhupada, he quotes Bhagavad Gita 7:20, says how the Kamesthesthe Hitagyane, they are Hitagyana, they are lost their intelligence, these demigod worshippers. Right? But then Prabhupada writes, of course it is recommended in the Vedic scriptures that if one wants money, health or education, then he should worship the various demigods. So the Grihamedi who wants to continue a prosperous materialistic way of life generally worships the demigods or the forefathers by offering pinda or respectful oblations like that. So you will see that if they want money, they worship Lakshmi Devi. If they want a good wife, whom do they worship? Uma, Gauri, Parvati, right? And whom else do they worship? If they want to Saraswati for education, if they want to vanquish the enemies, they worship Subramanya. If they want to remove obstacles in their life, they worship Ganapati. If they want to remove bad luck in their life, Shani, you know, the most popular, he has... Actually, even in the Panchopasana system, Shani is not even counted among the second grade demigods. But somehow, he rose to popularity because of his great service he is doing. So somehow, he is very popular among the Hindus. Anyway, but the point is, this whole system, how did it come about? It was not there in the Vedic time. So this is all the damage created by the so-called impersonalists. Prabhupada writes that. This kind of so-called pious and religious man is a result of impersonalism. The impersonalists maintain that the supreme absolute truth has no form and that one can imagine any form he likes for his benefit and worship in that way. Therefore, the Grihamedis or materialistic men say that they can worship any form of a demigod as worship of the supreme Lord. So they say that God is one. And all these 33 crore demigods are different aspects. They call them as God aspects. So you can worship any of these aspects of God. And finally you're worshipping one. All roads lead to Rome. So therefore all paths of worship, they ultimately take you towards that one God. So don't worry. Don't feel guilty in worshipping Shani. Don't feel guilty in worshipping Ganesha or anything like that. So, of course, all these demigods are very empowered personalities and they deserve respect. But what the impersonalism has done, what damage it has done to the entire fabric of Hindu society is that people started getting satisfied by the low-hanging fruits and forgot raising their standard above. Basically, the whole process of this upasana, the devata upasana, was so that somehow... They come to Sattvaguna and thereby transcend that eventually and come to the process of realizing the Supreme Ishvara, then the Brahman, Paramatma and ultimately Bhagavan. But somehow they got stuck thinking that, oh, I am worshipping that Supreme Bhagavan only by doing all this. So that is a big damage that the impersonalists have done to the Indian society. Yeah. Mike?
Praja, I think whatever the demigod worship which would happen during Vedic times and now what is happening, there is a lot of difference. I mean, maybe now what is happening is not mostly it's not even authorized worship also. So
yeah.
So at that time, was the impersonalism the influence, or now only just impersonalism has, you know, made the demigod worship like?
Okay. So if you go to the history of our, the whole how this system came about, until like the beginning of Kali Yuga, things were all nice. Everything was going by the Vedic way. So what were the demigods seen as? Like, for example, if you want to meet the Prime Minister of India, you have to go through the bureaucrats. So it's disrespect to the Prime Minister if you disrespect the bureaucrats, right? So in that context, the demigods were offered oblations with a view that these demigods are part of the Purusha, the universal form, and thereby through these demigods we are actually worshipping the universal form. Like when you read the fifth canto, you will see that Bharat Maharaj, son of Rishabdev, also did demigod puja. Because that was a custom there, but then within his mind he was thinking, I am indirectly worshipping the universal form. And the demigods are part of this universal form. Then over a period of time, when the Brahminical culture got degraded, the Purva Mimamsakas, they took over. The Karmavada philosophy took over. So therefore, everything is governed by karma. So which means what? If I offer an oblation, Indra has to come and give me rains. If I offer this Nariyal to Ganesh, he has to come and give me a brand new car. Got it? So that kind of a upasana took over. And the Purusha got forgotten in the whole background. Then Shankara, when he came, he saw that, okay, we have to revive this. So what he did was, he started the system of Panchopasana. Not that he started, but rather he promoted this concept of Panchopasana. Okay, you like worshipping demigods? Okay, here are the five main demigods. Shakti, Surya, Ganesha, Shiva and Vishnu. This Vishnu is not our Vishnu. This is Bhagavad Gita, philosophized Vishnu. Right? That personification of Sattva Guna, that Vishnu. So you are... So that kind of a system took over. And this impersonalism continued for a long time. And recent, in the last 200 years, this concept was picked up by our... So what was happening was... Okay, even little more... It is interesting to know this. This transition continued. Then at some point, the Western world became the hub of authority in the entire world, right? So because of the whole British invasion, and Western system of education took over. So in the Western system of education, the Orthodox Christianity was still ruling the intelligentsia of the Western world also, which means they also believed in fairies, they also believed in, you know, these kind of mystical things which were not normally explainable by today's modern rational mind. Then somewhere in late 17th century, there was a big thinker named by Miller, Thomas Miller, I think his name was, yeah. He came up, he wrote a book called as Logic. And that book became such a popular book in the academia in those days, that everybody started looking at the world from a rational perspective. And this was the seed for practically all the, there is a term for that. This whole modern scientific thinking has a term to it. It's out of my head now. This rational thinking, rationalism, started coming about thanks to Miller. So then slowly, when the rational mind took over, then scientists started saying that, oh no, the universe is not created by God. There is a law in nature, so let us try to study that law. So all the scientific thinking started developing with that. Then they discovered that, hey, the heavenly movements of the planets can be predicted. Right? If I can predict where the moon and sun are moving, which means I can predict the movement of the gods, which means they no more are godly. Right? So the divine picture of the cosmos and nature, the functioning of nature, was reduced to certain physical laws, certain scientific laws. So divinity lost its charm, rationalism took over. But when all this was happening in the Western society, the Indian society was still very strongly governed by its Vedic beliefs. But then once the so-called intelligent people in India also started accepting the Western rational thinking to be the main paradigm, that is, if anything has to be bona fide, then it has to fit into the Western rational paradigm. Then what eventually happened was, many of our own Indian, Hindu, Vedic scholars started interpreting the Vedas in a rational way. So the way you give a rational explanation to the mystical Vedic understanding is by reducing everything to energy. Right? So all forms of worship are nothing but connection of energy with energy. Right? Because it is, can you comprehend a person, a God, who is in the creation but still not in the creation? Can you comprehend a God who is simultaneously a person but simultaneously not a person? Right? So tadde jati, tanne jati, taddure, tadviyantike. So all these kind of Upanishad, if you cannot comprehend, give a rational explanation to that. So the easy way, a compromise was to uphold the supremacy of the Vedic knowledge. No, our Vedas are not just fables. So the Western people, they start coming, no, your Vedas are all time pass, bogus. They're all, fairy tales. They're just mystical stories. Somebody sat down and wrote those stories. They are not bona fide. See, our Western science is bona fide. So to kind of like prove the authenticity of the Vedas to the rational scientific Western mind, they started reducing the personal aspect to an impersonal understanding. And lot of the interpretation started coming. So in the process, what eventually happened was, impersonalism became like the standard interpretation of the Vedic texts. Then this is in the end of the, if you see, therefore, many of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, right? If you see his book Krishna Samhita, the first introduction of his entire book, he presents Vedic history exactly like what Western people interpret Indian history as. Like he talks about the 10 dasavataras to be like Darwin's theory of evolution. He talks about Aryan invasion theory. He supports that. Some of those things which the way the Western world interpret history in the last 5,000 years, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes that. But then why did he do that? He wrote this book specially to attract the intelligent Bengali crowd in those days. Right? So he wrote two books. He wrote Krishna Samhita to attract the intelligent, rational, scientific, Western thinking Bengalis. And for the Vedic, traditional Vaishnav, Gaudiya people, to attract that kind of youth, he wrote Jaiva Dharma, which is like a comic, which is like a novel. But within that novel story, there is a nice... Because in the same time, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, all the Bengali poetic era was also rising. So therefore, he wrote that to cater to, you know, that kind of audience. See, look how brilliant Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. According to the mood and the need of the people, according to the current popular trends, he used to write books like that. Anyway, he did that, so you can see that. But in the process, what happened was, in the late 18th century and early 19th century, the Indian freedom struggle had to come up. And the only way you could bring people together was having a common religion, a common practice. So everything had to be one. And the best philosophy that supports that oneness is impersonalism, Mayavad. So if you see, practically all the popular spiritualists of 1850 to 1950 were also supporters of the freedom movement. Like Bhaktisiddhanta is the only person you will see who said, to hell with your freedom struggle. Whether independence or no independence, you are always under the dependence of Maya. You are always bound by Maya. That is the biggest emergency. Right? So you see all the, in India, if you pick up Bhagavad Gita, people will read Mahatma Gandhi's Bhagavad Gita or you know, or Ram Mohan Roy's Bhagavad Gita or anything like that. These are the popular books. Why? So they started mixing, looking at spirituality now with the motive of uniting people for a freedom struggle cause. So impersonalism kind of like took deeper foothold in the Indian society through these means. And if you see, all the popular spiritual organizations were set up by these freedom fighters. And their main philosophy was, all demigods are good. Okay, in South, if you want to worship this demigod, yes, we agree to that, because all demigods are there, all are right. Ultimately, we are all going to the same path, that is Brahman. And that is how impersonalism took, and that is how the whole fabric of the Hindu society got, you know, disturbed. Because, anyway, these are all further discussions, because the whole Varnashram got destroyed because of this contamination. Because everything is one. All four classes are one. Right? So these are all the repercussions that came about because of this impersonalism. So the biggest damage to Indian society was done by this impersonalism. And all these upasana of demigods became popular like that. So that's how, you know, you can trace this. So basically these are, bottom line is, all these are basically kama mudhas, as this verse talks about. Right? The only reason why they are worshipping, it's not that they have bhakti to that particular devata. Very simple, it's a business transaction like that. So then, two more verses about this. What does it talk about? Their path. Tashraddhayakrantamati Pitrideva vratah puman Gatva chandram sam lokam ka chandram sam lokam soma pah punar eshayati.
Such materialistic persons, attracted by sense gratification and devoted to the forefathers and demigods, can be elevated to the moon, where they drink an extract of the soma plant. They again return to this planet.
Like that. So what is moon? So moon is like the retreat center for the demigods. Even among Swargaloka Vasis, moon is considered like very opulent place. So that's why when Prabhupada said moon landing, what do you see on the moon? They only see rock and so on. They never went to moon. Because moon is full of vegetation and beautiful orchids and gardens, and you get so many beautiful apsaras are there, and you know, and there is somaras that you can get there if you want. Like that. Everybody is thinking twice now. Right? But, in spite of being promoted to the moon, however, one has to come back to this earth again when the merits of his work and sacrifice are finished. Like that. Then the next verse talks about how even this moon planet, all these planets are also temporary. Yada cha hindra shayyayam shete ananta sano harihi tada lokalayam yanti
All the planets of the materialistic persons, including all the heavenly planets, such as the moon, are vanquished when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, goes to his bed of serpents, which is known as Anantashesh.
Like that. That's the whole point. So they only want to transmigrate from, go to moon, again come down to earth, again do some pious credits, go to moon, again come down. They only want to go in this, Prabhupada calls this the Ferris wheel, right? Like that. Then the next 11 verses, text number 5 to text number 15, Kapila Muni is going to talk about the Nivritti mark. So within the Nivritti mark, he talks about three types. One is the Nishkama Karma followers. Second are the Virata Purusha followers and the Hiranyagarbha. I mean, Virata, Hiranyagarbha are pretty much the same type, like that. So the conclusion is, all these techniques also function only if there is bhakti involved in their process. Then, now on the contrary, next verse, Yeswadharmana duhyanti dhira kamartha hetave nissanga nyashta karmanaha ప్రశాంత శుద్ధ చేతస.
Those who are intelligent and are of purified consciousness are completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Freed from the modes of material nature, they do not act for sense gratification. Rather, since they are situated in their own occupational duties, they act as one is expected to act.
Like that. So then, so far we saw about the attached, the grihamedis, the sakama karmis. Then now we are going to see about these nissanga nyasta karmanaha. Nissanga means who are free from all attachment, nyasta karmanaha. They have given up the results of their fruitive activities. Such a people, what is their characteristic? They are prashanta, they are peaceful. And they are shuddha chetasa, they are purified in their consciousness. Like that. So Prabhupada writes, the example of such a person is Arjuna. Arjun, before the battlefield, did he want all the kingdom? Nothing. After the Bhagavad Gita, did he want the kingdom? No. Then before he said, no point in fighting because I don't want the kingdom. But after hearing Bhagavad Gita, he said, I still don't want the kingdom, but I will fight. Why? Because it's my duty. Like that. So, he fought not for his sense gratification, but for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, persons who work at their prescribed duties, not for sense gratification, but for gratification of the Supreme Lord, are called Nissanga. Freed from the influence of the modes of material nature. So Nissanga, Sanga from what? Attachment, connection with what? The modes of material nature. Then Nyasta Karmanaha indicates that the results of their activities are given to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such persons appear to be acting on the platform of their respective duties, but such activities are not performed for personal sense gratification, rather they are performed for the Supreme Person. Such devotees are called Prashanta, which means completely satisfied. Why are they completely satisfied? Because they are not working for their personal sense gratification. Right? The moment you work for your personal sense gratification, you are full of anxiety. Right? The best example is, you know, prasadam serving on a festival day when you know the main item is little less in number. Right? So if you are thinking of, during serving, if you are just thinking about, are wo last tak mere liye samosa bachega ki nahi? Right, Rasik Gauri ne only 50 pieces banaya aaj. Or this fellow is taking 3 pieces already. One per head banaya, this ye already 5-3 kha liya idhar. And all these thoughts are going in your mind. So you will never be peaceful. But if you just think, you know, I am on an Ayurvedic, you know, medication. So aloo is forbidden for me. No fried items for me. Such a person will serve completely, blissfully. Oh Prabhu, you ate only 3. Here, take 2 more. Right? Free from all anxiety. That is the point. That is what it means to be prashanta. And he is shuddha chetasa, means he is Krishna conscious, clear in his consciousness. Like that. because you asked me, now I have to answer. I was about to ask you all this question. But anyway. So, apparently, this whole description sounds like a devotee, right? And Prabhupada is also saying that, you know, he's working for Krishna, activities given for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, and he's completely satisfied. It as if like usto sthita pragya ka description jaise aa raha hai. But these are not exactly like devotees per se, in a sense that they are not pure devotees, but these are still on the platform of karma, right? Like you could say they are like the karma yogis, but they are still practicing that nishkama karma. So within the rung of bhakti, nishkama karma also comes within the rung of bhakti only, but still they are not like the topmost devotees, right? So beyond nishkama karma, then there are the sadhana bhaktas, and there are the pure devotees, and among the pure devotees there are even gradations and so on. So these are like the lowest rung of dude. So they are not fully completely pure yet, right? So in that context, so these are the, and second thing is, these devotees, Kapila Muni is going to explain later on, it is not that they have a complete understanding of the absolute truth. They may be worshipping only Ishvara, God as the generator, operator and destroyer. They may be worshipping only the Virata Purusha, the universal form. it is not necessary that they are all worshippers of the Supreme Personality of God, of the Bhagavan aspect, feature. Right? So in that sense, they are not, they are like mixed devotees. But still, at least they are selfless in their approach. Like that. Then, next verse talks about another characteristic, how they are completely purified. Nivritti dharma nirata. Nirmama nirahankrita. Swadharma aptena sattvena. Parishuddhena chetasa.
By executing one's occupational duties, acting with detachment and without a sense of proprietorship or false egoism, one is posted in one's constitutional position by dint of complete purification of consciousness. And by thus executing so-called material duties, he can easily enter into the kingdom of God.
Like that. So these are parishuddha chetasa. They are completely purified in their consciousness and they are nivritti dharma nirataha. Nivritti dharma nirata means constantly engaging in executing religious activities for detachment. So that's the nivritti park here. Now, every one of us who has come to this material world has a sense of overlordship. This is called pravritti. But the opposite type of religious performance is called nivritti. This is to act for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Engage in devotional service in Krishna consciousness. One has no proprietorship claim, nor is one situated in the false egoism of thinking that he is God or master. He always thinks himself the servant. That is the process of purifying consciousness. Like that. So this is a very interesting point. What is the nivritti dharma nirataha? So this verse very much sounds like 3.30 Bhagavad Gita. What is 3.30? Yes, Bhagavad Gita group. Sachi Sushanbo disappeared at the right. Oh, there you are. Okay. 3.30. Nirasha Nirmama Bhutva Yudhasa Vigata Jvara. Last two lines. What is the first line? Mayi Sarvani Karmani. Sanyasa Adhyatma Chetasa. Nirasha Nirmama Bhutva. So it is like that. So these are, we are still talking about. So even in that purport, if you see 3.30 purport, Prabhupada equates Karma Yoga with Bhakti Yoga. Very synonymously writes Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga together. So this is, so in that mood, Prabhupada has given this translation also. Vishnu Chakra Thakur likes to be very categorical. Bhakti means only Shuddha Bhakti. Nothing more than that, nothing less than that. Right? So in that context, Vishnu Chakra Thakur, he puts these as followers of the universal form, followers of the Hiranya Garbha, so on. So if you see your book, Subodhini, what does it give as? Yeah, does it give any kind of, whom do they worship, is it mentioned there? It has not, okay, good. Then it's fine. Because in your previous version of this notes, it used to be called as the followers of the, because those notes were made with mainly based on Vishnu Chakra Thakur's purports. So there it was mentioned that these are the followers of the Virat Rupa. Like what you studied in the second canto, first chapter. These followers of the universal form, what happens to them? How do they attain mukti? Krama mukti. So what is krama mukti? And where do they go finally? Right, but just one step before liberation is? They go to Brahma Loka. Right? And they go take shelter of Brahma. Either they merge in Brahma or they stay in Brahma Loka. And at the time of cosmic annihilation, they all pack their bags and go. Go where? Brahman. They don't go into the personal feature. So this section is actually talking about those people. Like that. Those who follow the Vedic path and gradually detach themselves, follow the Varnashram, follow their Swadharma, finally take sannyas, gradually detach themselves, go through Karma Mukti, enter into the body of Brahma, finally detach themselves. So this is talking about that. So this later on future verses and translation Prabhupada highlights that. I'm just giving you for a prior reference. Like that. Yeah.
previously by Kapil Dev also it was described that those who perform the bhakti in mode of goodness, they want to get detached from their result of activities. They offer everything as a duty to the Lord. But then their back of mind, they want to get liberated. Is it the same kind of person? Like
yes. This is, see, that's what. Even Sattviki bhakti is contaminated by Sattvaguna. But gradually he is taking them to the standard of Parabhakti or Ananya Bhakti. So these are still in that platform only, yes. Who are looking for liberation as the highest goal. Like that. Because even as long as you are still under the influence of Sattvaguna, you cannot aspire for, you know, say Dasya Rasa. The five rasas does not come into picture. Sayuja Mukti is only the goal for even the Sattviki Bhakti aspirants. Like that. Yes, Prabhu. Our Nivritti only, right? Because apparently it may seem like we are actually involved with things, right? But in the back of our consciousness, what is our mood? Our goal is not that I'm doing this so that I get more of this. I'm engaging in, say, I'm gratifying my tongue with all these wonderful foodstuffs. For what purpose? To purify my tongue, not for gratifying my senses. Whereas a pravritti mark person, what does he do? Oh, I will do all these yajñas and tapasyas and all these things so that I gratify my senses, so that I get more sense gratification. So yes, ours is very much a nivritti mark, right? Because our whole goal is ultimately we want to get over this attachment to matter and connect more to, so this, because element of detachment from material enjoyment is there, it is very much a path of nivritti. No. That's what. The nivritti path in itself has many, it's like a big umbrella of paths. That's why in the beginning I told you nivritti includes nishkama karma, Hiranyagarbha followers, Virat Roop followers, and even the so-called jnanis, which will come next. Later on also, after this section, Kapila Muni, like Vishwa Jagadhava says that Devahuti asked the question, though it is not in the verses. Devahuti asked the question, I understood about bhakti, I understood about the pravritti and nivritti margas. I also heard that there are somebody called as jnanis who worship the absolute truth in a non-dualistic way, this monoistic way. What about them? Can you explain me more about the jnanis? So Kapila Muni talks about jnana also, jnana yoga path also, and finally concludes that even to attain Brahman liberation you need bhakti. Even to merge into Brahman you finally need bhakti. That's how he concludes that also. So all of these are within the bracket of nivritti. Even karma yoga also is nivritti. The moment you add the term yoga, is all about detachment only, because the higher connection is there. This we are talking about the sakama karmis. See, sakama karma yoga, there are two different terms, right? So the Mishra Bhaktas, like demigods whom we hear about, they are put in the category of sakama karmis. They are sakama karma yogis. Here we are talking about sakama karmis who engage in all these Vedic ritualistic processes only for the sake of gratifying their senses further and further. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Pravriddhi, increasing and decreasing. No, in general, pravritti, nivritti means that. To increase and to decrease. What? Yes. Yeah. Yes,
Prabhu.
Yeah. So the Prabhu's question is that if you read the standard of Grihamedis, that is also very advanced because they are doing Vedic rituals. What about those that we see today? Who don't even follow any Vedic path. It's just blatant gratification of senses. So they are actually put in the animal category. Right? They are not even considered in the human category. at least to come to the animal human platform, you follow the Varnashram, you follow the Vedic process like that. Okay. Right, so then we saw Nivritti Mark, then text number 7. Suryadwarena teyanti purusham vishvato mukham paravaresham prakritim asyotpatya antabhavanam.
Through the path of illumination, such liberated persons approach the complete personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of the material and spiritual worlds and is the supreme cause of their manifestation and dissolution.
Right? So, Surya Dwarena Te Yanti. Yanti means they approach Surya Dwara through the path of sun. Right? Previously, they were going to the path of moon for enjoyment. So, sun is a sign of Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, the sign of knowledge, wisdom, liberation. So, this is the path of the sun, basically, literally means here that they are attaining a higher param gati, aditya varnam tamasa parastat. So like that. Then paravaresham. So here is a here. This is the verse based on which Vishnuacharya Thakur says, whom are they attaining? These people, surya dwarena te is means they. So what does the word they here mean? Whom is it referring to? The previous three verses, the so-called prashanta, shuddha chetasa. This whole category of people that we saw who are following the Nivritti Mark, Surya Dwarena, they attain. Whom do they attain? Purusham Vishvato Mukham. Vishvato Mukham is, does it ring a bell? Yes. Ekatvena Pritaktvena Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. So that is a third category of the worshippers. That is the universal form worshippers. So taking that as the cue, Vishnuacharya Thakur, he says that actually this Nivritti Mark, these few verses is talking about the Virat Purusha worshippers. And next verse talks about Hiranyagarbha also. So that even adds to that. But then interesting how Prabhupada translates Purusham Vishvato Mukham. Prabhupada says Purusham is a personality of Godhead. Vishvato Mukham is whose face is turned everywhere. This is the word to word. But in the translation Prabhupada writes, complete personality of Godhead. Like that. So Prabhupada gives a very devotional translation and purport here. So the word Surya Dwarena means by the illuminated path or through the sun planet. And that illuminated path is devotional service. The word Purusham Vishvatomukham means the supreme personality of Godhead who is all perfect. Right? Paravaresham. Paravaresham means the master of both spiritual and material worlds. And Paravaresham Prakritim. Prakritim here refers to the entire material cause of creation. So we have two causes, material cause and efficient cause. They are two popular causes. So this verse talks about that supreme personality of Godhead, Purusham Vishvato Mukham, who is Paravaresham, master of the material and spiritual worlds, Prakritim, who is the source of the material cause, and two, who is Asyopatya Antabhavanam, who is also the efficient cause of creation. Like that. So, yeah. Huh. Okay, what is the difference between Hiranyamaya, Hiranyagarbha and Virata Rupa? What is Hiranyagarbha? Aggregate of? All living entities. What is Virata Purusha? Okay, and then what is Hiranmaya? So anything which is golden is Hiranmaya. So the effulgence of the Lord is Hiranmaya. The Garbha, the Anda also is, the cosmic egg is also effulgent of golden color, therefore it is called as, you know, Hiranyagarbha. So it is like this. This comes in that 38th verse of this chapter, where Prabhupada compares the human body with the cosmic body. Just like how the human body also starts from an egg and expands into this form, right? Likewise, the cosmic body also begins with an egg and grows into a universal form. Now, from a purist point of view, it is not that God's form has come from that egg, because that would add a cause to the supreme cause. So therefore, we don't say it like that, that the universal form was grew out of the cosmic egg. But rather, what we say is, the universal form is there, but the purpose of this universal form, why was it created? Why was the universe created? To fulfill the desires of the jivas. So that aggregate of all the jivas and their desires in an unmanifested, in a potent form. Potent means ready to explode. It is not active yet, but potent, like potential energy bolte na. So that potent form is a Hiranyagarbha, the cosmic egg, the golden cosmic egg. That when it expands, the purpose of creation is all there in that egg. And that expands, and the universal form also manifests, and the whole jivas, they come out, their karmas, svabhavas also come out, and the rest of the creation continues that way, like that. Yes, Prabhuji. They attain param. Paravaresham, yeah. He says they are universal form worshippers, Vishwatamukham. But the thing is, these so-called universal form worshippers, they don't attain universal form, like what we studied in 2.1, second canto, first chapter. They go through Krama Mukti, they merge into the body of Brahma. And then, thing is, because they are not devotees, they cannot attain liberation. So they use Brahmaji's body as a means, as a carrier to enter into Brahman. But then from there they again fall down, because that, anyway. So I mean, few verses later your question will be answered. It is all there in this chapter only.
Yeah, I heard you said, like, if they attain Virat Purusha, so I was confused, because Virat Purusha, they mentioned,
in itself is not there. Yeah, yeah, correct. Okay, lot of questions today. Then, Dviparardhasavaneyah Radhavasaneyah Pralayo Brahmanastute Tavat Adhyasate Lokam Parasya Parachintakah.
Worshippers of the Hiranyagarbha expansion of the personality of Godhead remain within this material world until the end of two parardhas, when Lord Brahma also dies.
Like that. So persons who are worshippers of Hiranyagarbha, the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, do not directly approach the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha. They remain within the universe on Satyaloka or higher planets until the end of life of Brahma. Then with Brahma, they are elevated to the spiritual kingdom. Like that. So here it says, so this is answer to your previous question. They are Parasya Parachintakaha. Whom are they meditating upon? Parasya. Parasya means? Who is Parasya? Some transcendental being. That is Parasya. It is not specifically personality of Godhead or Brahman or Paramatma. No. Parasya is just some transcendental being. Like that. So Prabhupada in the translation, he gives always thinking of Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here is, they are just Parasya Chintakas. So in this purport, Vishnu Jagdhakur, he writes, the worshippers of Hiranyagarbha by Bhakti Mishra Jnana gradually attain liberation along with Brahma. Those who are on Brahma Loka with exalted status at the time of dissolution go directly to the Supreme Abode along with Brahma. This is a quotation from Kurma Puran. And then Vishnu Jagdhakur writes, however, if they worship only Hiranyagarbha without bhakti for Vishnu, they do not attain liberation when Brahmaji is liberated. That will be explained in the next three verses. Like that. So then, so let's go with the flow of these four verses and we'll summarize again. Because basically the what is coming up now is, all these so-called universal form worshippers are also, without bhakti they will not attain their due destination. That is the summary of this whole five verses. Then, Kshamambho aninali lavyan mana indriyartha. Bhutadibhi pravritim prati sanja jishuhu. Avyakritam vishati arhi guna trayatma. Kalam parakhyam anubhuya parasvayambhuhu.
After experiencing the inhabitable time of the three modes of material nature known as two parardhas, Lord Brahma closes the material universe, which is covered by layers of earth, water, air, fire, ether, mind, ego, etc., and goes back to Godhead.
Like that. So here it is. Avyakritam vishati yarhi guna trayatma. The third line, avyakritam. That avyakritam here refers to the spiritual sky. Vyakrita means that which is subjected to change. Avyakrita means that which does not change. That is spiritual sky. Like that. So, when after ruling over the material universe under the influence of the time element, Lord Brahma desires to dissolve it and enters into kingdom of God, then others also enter with him. Like that. But then, what happens? Next number 10. Evam paretya bhagavantam anupravishta. Ye yogi no jitamarun manaso viragaha. Teneva sakam amritam purusham puranam. Brahma pradhanam upayanti agatam atmabhi.
The yogis who become detached from the material world by practice of breathing exercises and control of the mind reach the planet of Brahma, which is far, far away. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma, and therefore when Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God.
That is the point. So, Brahma Pradhanam Upayanti. So, what happens is, by perfecting their yogic practice, yogis can reach the highest planet Brahmaloka or Satyaloka, and after giving up their material bodies, they can enter into the body of Brahma. Because they are not directly devotees of the Lord, they cannot get liberation directly. They have to wait until Brahmaji is liberated, and only then along with Brahma they get liberated. It is clear that as long as a living entity is a worshipper of a particular demigod, his consciousness is absorbed in thoughts of that demigod, and therefore he cannot get direct liberation or enter into the kingdom of God. Nor can he merge into the impersonal effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such yogis or demigod worshippers are subjected to the chance of taking birth again when there is creation again. So the point is, even the so-called demigod worship also cannot give you the highest path. So therefore the so-called Mayavadi interpretation that Yathomat, Tathopat, whichever demigod you worship will take you to the highest abode, to Brahman, even that is also denied here. So then after saying that, then how bhakti is the topmost is highlighted in the next verse. It's a very important verse. Athattam sarvabhutanam hritpadmeshu kritalayam shrutanubhavam sharanam rajabhavena bhamini.
Therefore, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart.
So that is the point. So because even if you go through this, the Nivritti mark, go take shelter of the universal, of meditate on the universal form, go through Kamala Mukti, merge into the body of Brahma, even then I don't have guarantee that I will attain liberation along with Brahmaji at the time of cosmic annihilation. Why? Because I don't have bhakti in my heart. So why are you doing all this indirect path? Better directly engage in devotional service. That is the conclusion. We read this purport, it is very nice. One can attain direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness and revive one's eternal relationship with him as lover, as supreme soul, as son, friend, or as master. One can re-establish the transcendental loving relationship with the Supreme Lord in so many ways, and that feeling is true oneness. The oneness of the Mayavadi philosophers and the oneness of Vaishnava philosophers are different. The Mayavadi and Vaishnava philosophers both want to merge into the Supreme, but the Vaishnavas do not lose their identities. They want to keep their identity of lover, parent, friend, or servant. So even the Mayavadis, when they worship the different demigods also, their mood is because for them the demigod itself does not exist. It is only an aspect of that Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Divinity. So if I want to develop qualities like intelligence and strength and things like that, then I meditate on the demigod known as Ganesha. What happens? Then I become Ganesha, which means I develop the qualities of Ganesha. So that is the conception of oneness, the Mayavadi oneness. But here is Prabhupada deriding that. No, that is not real oneness. The oneness is when there is a relationship. So even we become one with the Lord, but how do we become one with the Lord? One in the purpose, and we still maintain our identity. That is the difference. So in the transcendental world, the servant and master are one. That is the absolute platform. Although the relationship is servant and master, both servant and the served stand on the same platform. In that sense, that is oneness. Lord Kapila advised his mother that she did not need any indirect process. She was already situated in the direct process because the Supreme Lord had taken birth as her son. Actually, she did not need any further instruction because she was already in the perfectional stage. She was considering, she was having a Vatsalya Bhav with the Lord himself. What more does she need? Kapila Dev advised her to continue in the same way. He therefore advised his mother as Bhamini to indicate that she was already thinking of the Lord as her son. So, my dear mother, he addressed her, which means, oh, you are already situated in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So, you don't have to do anything more. Devahuti is advised by Lord Kapila to take directly to devotional service. Krishna consciousness, because without that consciousness, one cannot become liberated from the clutches of Maya. So that is the point. So, even the so-called Nivritti Mark is such an indirect path, and still there is no guarantee until one takes to the process of devotional service like that. So then this next three verses, it talks about this doubt factor in the Nivritti Mark, how they again potentially can come back. Yeah.
I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has mentioned Jivara Swarup Hoye Nitya Krishna Das. So that constitutional position is the servant. But here, Prabhupada is mentioning that there is identity of lover, parent, friend, or servant. So, to understand
what
this?
Is the difference between Mava, Rabdi, Pasundi, and brown condensed red? You know, when you boil the milk for a long time, it turns red in color. What is the difference between all of them? In Tattva, they are all milk only. So, Dasya Ras is the foundation of all rasas in spiritual world. Kaviraj Goswami explains this in Adi Leela 5th chapter. Where he says that, by default, everybody is in Dasya Ras only. Even the so-called Vatsalya Bhav also is happening on the strong platform of Dasya Bhav only. Even the Madhurya Ras is also on the platform of Dasya Bhav. Like that. So even the so-called, you know, sometimes the Naika Bhav, as it is called. Naika Bhav means, Naika means heroine, but not just heroine actually. It is like a heroine who takes control over the hero. So Rupa Goswami explains this in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. Even that, so like how Radharani. So Radharani's mood and Chandravali's mood is very different. Chandravali is always in a very humble, you are my master mood. But Radharani, sometimes she dominates over Krishna. Even that happens on the platform of Dasya Bhav. How will you understand this? Like that. So the foundational rasa in spiritual world is Dasya only. Huh. Yes. Okay. So it is not that Sakya Bhav is inferior to Madhurya Bhav or something like that. It is like beyond a certain stage, it is left to the individual swarupa of the jiva. A person who is like Hanumanji can never think about Sakyaras. It is not that Sakyaras is higher than that is again our comparison in this material realm. So like Hanumanji is fully satisfied in Dasya Bhav only. Even if he asks Lord Ram, even if he invites him and says, come sit next to me, he will never sit. Even if Lord Ram gives him the Sakya position, he will never accept. Because he is fully satisfied in that.
My question was like, if one will attain this lover bhav, so first he will develop this Dasya Bhav, then friend bhav will come, then Vatsalya bhav will come. Then
oh, like that. Okay. Yes, those moods are incorporated in each of them, yes. So in Madhurya Bhav, all the other moods are incorporated, yes. Like that it is mentioned.
First one will feel like servant, then friend.
It's not one will feel, that in different situations, these different feelings come out. It is not a progression. Simultaneously, like on one particular situation, a person in, say for example, Mother Yashoda is serving Krishna. Sometimes she feels like, oh, I am a servant of Krishna. I should make this butter for pleasing Krishna. Sometimes she feels like, oh, she jokingly talks with Krishna like a friend. Right? That mood is there. But though the main mood of Vatsalya is there, but still the other moods also, they come up like that.
But this friend will never feel like Vatsalya.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Yes, all these are incorporated in that, yes. But the thing is, the dominant mood is in that, that is what called the swarupa. That one dominant mood is always there, like that. So then, okay. Text number 12-15. Adyasthiracharanamyo.
Adyasthiracharanamyo.
Veda-garbha-sahashribihi
Yogeshware-kumaradye
Siddher-yoga-pravartakai
Veda-drishtya-abhimanena
Nissangena-api-karmana
Kartatvat-sagunam-brahma
Purusham-purusharshabham Sasamshritya punah kale
Kale
neshwara murtina
Jate
guna
vyatikare
Yatha purvam prajayate
Aishwaryam
parameshtham
cha
Te api
dharma
vinirmritam
Nissevya punar
ayanti
Gunavyati
kare sati.
My dear mother, someone may worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a special self-interest, but even demigods such as Lord Brahma, great sages such as Sanat Kumar, and great munis such as Marichi have to come back to the material world again at the time of creation. When the interaction of the three modes of material nature begins, Brahma, who is the creator of this cosmic manifestation and who is full of Vedic knowledge, and the great sages who are the authors of the spiritual path and the yoga system, come back under the influence of the time factor. They are liberated by their non-fruitive activities and they attain the first incarnation of the Purusha. But at the time of creation, they come back in exactly the same forms and positions as they had previously.
Right. So this may sound a little confusing. We'll go line by line. Basically, this is the most important word here is Punar Ayanti Gunavyati Kare Sati, the last line here. And Punar Ayanti means what? Again, they come back with the interaction of the modes. Again, when the creation begins, interaction of modes begins means creation, when it begins, again they come back. Why do they come back? The second verse, first line. Bedha drishti abhimanena. Bedha drishti abhimanena. Abhiman is misconception. Yeah, pride, misconception. Bedha drishti means the vision of seeing the difference. So Prabhupada writes that because of independent vision, but it's actually Bedha here is the difference only. So what is the difference that they see basically? Because they are not able to see the oneness of this impersonal and personal aspects of the Lord. These so-called Krama Bhakti Vadis or the so-called Jnana Vadis who are taking this path, they do not recognize the different forms of the Lord to be real. They reject them, thinking they are also products of material creation. So because they are rejecting the forms of the Lord, they are seeing that Bedha. And that is the reason why they eventually come down. So that is nicely highlighted in... So we'll read the purport now. So the point is that Brahma becomes liberated is known to everyone, but he cannot liberate his own devotees. Who are Brahmaji's devotees here again? All these people who merge into the body of Brahma, at the time of liberation, Brahma cannot take them with him. It's no guarantee that he can take everybody with him. Why? Bedha drishtya means that Brahma sometimes thinks that he is independent of the Supreme Lord, or he thinks of himself as one of the three equally independent incarnations, like Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, like that. So, here the word Bedha drishtya occurs because Brahma has a slight inclination to think that he is independent as Rudra. Right? Rudra is a different tattva, a completely independent tattva. But Brahmaji is not an independent tattva. He is very much a jiva tattva only. Sometimes Brahma thinks that he is independent of the Supreme Lord, and the worshipper also thinks that Brahma is independent. For this reason, after destruction of the material world, when there is again creation by the interaction of the material modes of nature, Brahma comes back. Although Brahma reaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the first Purusha incarnations, Mahavishnu, who is full with transcendent qualities, he cannot stay in the spiritual world. So at the time of annihilation, Brahmaji and all these living entities who are merged in the body of Brahma, they go up to Mahavishnu. But again, once the Mahavishnu's glance triggers the Pradhan and the creation begins, they again come back. They are forced to come back. So that shows the fallacy of this path. It's not a foolproof path. Although Brahma and Shiva are great personalities, but still they have an inclination to try to become one with the Supreme. Therefore, they have to come back. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is accepted that as long as one thinks that he is equal with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is not completely purified or knowledgeable. So even monoism is also not complete knowledge. There is incompletion. Because of that incompletion, because they are seeing that Bedha between the transcendental form of the Lord and that Brahman, they are seeing the difference between Krishna's divine form and his impersonal form, that is the reason because of which they have to come down again. That is the last imperfection that they have in them. It is a great fall down on the part of impersonalists to think that the Supreme Lord appears within the material body, and that one should therefore not meditate upon the form of the Supreme, but should meditate instead on the formless. For this particular mistake, even the great mystic yogis or great stalwart transcendentalists also come back again when there is creation. That is a problem. Because they are not able to see the oneness of form and formlessness of Krishna. Between the Brahman and the Bhagavan features of the Lord, they are not able to see that oneness. They are still seeing the difference. That is the reason why they fall down. So what do they see the form of Krishna as? What is the term for it? Of course, Maya, but it is? What is the key word I am looking for? Vikar was yesterday. Saguna Brahman. They say Ishvara is Saguna Brahman. So, Brahman, when it takes gunas, sattva guna, that is Ishvara. So they say that the form of the Lord is also a product of Maya, but it is very pure form of, like, you know, only, you know, like they say, it is like saying, like how the joke goes, like this boy, he goes to marry someone. So the girl asks, you know, the girl tells the boy that I'm only little pregnant. So it is like that. So basically it's a contaminated form. Like that, the Mayavadis also, they say, yeah, Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, yeah, Vishnu is also nice. You know, he's like, little contamination is there. So just by saying that, it is as good as saying it is like little pregnant. So it's like an offense onto the transcendental form of the Lord. So that is how they are aparadhis to the Krishna's form. So therefore, all living entities other than the impersonalists and monoists can directly take to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness and become liberated by developing transcendental loving service to the Lord. That is the point. So therefore this, and then Vishnu Acharya Thakur also writes a very nice purport. We'll read this. So the question that may come is that all these great, great, great Kramamuktis, yogis, transcendentalists, Nivrittivadis, whatever list that we have seen, how can they again fall down after going till merging into, they merge into the form of the Lord, into Mahavishnu, how can they again come back? This is a big dilemma, right? So that he answers. How is it possible for the greatest of yogis like the Kumaras and other perfected beings and gurus omniscient through yoga to practice to have false conception of identity and to see difference? How could they be great masters of yoga but have false identity and see the difference? Without false conceptions, they search out the undifferentiated Brahman, but having the conception, important point, having the conception that Brahman takes on variety only through Maya, they see difference in the personal form of Lord who actually excludes difference, just as one sees difference between material objects. What do you understand? Through Maya. Okay, good. You understood that part. Let's read the second half of the sentence. They see difference in the personal form of the Lord who actually excludes difference, just as one sees difference between material objects. So according to Mayavadis, what they say is all this different Nama and Rupa that you are seeing here is all because of product of Maya. Every name and form that you are seeing here is actually Maya. So perfection means when you transcend these names and forms and you become beyond this, nameless and formless, like that. So because of that anartha, because they are not able to understand that, even the Lord can exhibit these names and forms which are transcendental. Lord's names and forms are transcendental, they are not material. So there can be spiritual variety, but that variety is comprised not of Maya, but out of the Sachidananda. Because they are not able to understand this, that is why they fall down. And they identify themselves as realizers of Brahman and reject the Lord with form. With this vision and identity, they think they are the doers, they have the right to action. Therefore, they return. So that deep down, that one contamination remains that, hey, I have attained this Brahman. That sense of doership is there, that I have attained this without the Lord's support. That sense of doership is there. I have become as powerful as Brahman and therefore I have transcended the Maya of the Ishwar. Wo ek doership rehta hai. Because of that, they come down. So what has been described here are Brahma, sages, yogis, jnanis and kumaras who are devoid of bhakti in some particular universe. The Brahmas and sages, all the universes have bhakti and thus attain liberation and prema bhakti with dasya and other relationships according to the degree of bhakti. So it is not that every time Brahma falls down. Sometimes it so happens that one Brahma in one remote universe happens to have this kind of wrong understanding. And in that universe, this kind of things happen like that. Mike, please.
What is the merging here? Merging in the body of Brahma and merging in the body of Mahavishnu.
Hmm.
Because normally after Brahma's lifetime, all the living entities merge in the body of Mahavishnu, isn't it?
Yes.
So what is the special here? And again, these worshippers, they merge in the body of Brahma means what?
So, what is Brahmaji's body made of? Huh? What is the proof of that? What is the proof that Brahmaji's body is made of intelligence? What type of intelligence? Here's a question for all of you. If Brahmaji's body is made out of intelligence, then in Krama Mukti, have they not already left intelligence? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, they left. Man, buddhi, ahankar also they left. The only thing that is left with them is, what feeling is left with those people, residents of higher lokas, second canto, second chapter? Nay. That compassionate feeling still remains, because of which sometimes they descend as Mahapurushas and then they, you know, deliver the people also. Right? That is there. But if they've already left all these other man, buddhi, ahankar, the buddhi is already left, then what is it that they are carrying with them there? And what is then, if Brahmaloka is, they have to be synonymous with Brahmaji, right? So if Brahmaji's form already has intelligence, as you all are claiming, so then they already left intelligence, and what form are they carrying? Coverings are after Brahmaloka. So then in Brahmaloka, are they carrying all the layer coverings? So where did we read about Brahmaji's form? Huh? Does Brahmaji have a form? He has. What is his body comprised of? Goodness. He's Shuddha Sattva, huh? Yes, we heard a statement saying Brahmaji's form is made of pure intelligence. What is the proof for that? Throw everything that you heard about Brahmaji, you will get the answer. Yes, very good. Where did you study this? Where did you first time study about this in Bhagavatam? Which canto? Second canto. Where in second canto did you study this? So in that section, if you see carefully, the form of Brahmaji is described by one word. Okay, you read the Vak past time already? Huh. Okay. Right? So what exactly happened in the Vak episode? Right, it is not that he had physical senses to enjoy. A subtle mentality came that, hey, these prajapatis whom I created are such buddhus, they are not progenating, they are not expanding the creation at the pace at which I want. So, if I take shelter of a feminine potency, if I utilize a feminine potency, I can propagate the creation faster. That thought came in his head. Rather than Brahmaji's role is, he doesn't propagate, he doesn't progenate. He just creates the prajapatis and upadrushta, he just sits there and watches the whole show. But somehow, because of still being under the influence of the mode of passion, that result mentality came in his mind. Are yaar, result nahi aa raha hai, I'm not getting the due results. Let me do it. So he started entering into micromanagement. Then he thought, okay, here is vak, one feminine potency through which I can do it. So that was a contamination. So if you read that section carefully, Brahmaji's form is described as Vaikarika. What is Vaikarika? You heard this term before? Huh? Vaikarika demigods you heard. Then? Mode of goodness also. Then? Vaikarika is the potential to create intelligence. Vaikarika is one of the vaks. There are four vaks. Vaikarika, Madhyama, Pashyanti and Paravak. These are four levels of sound. Intelligible sound. The potential to generate intellectual sound is Vaikarika. So when you say Brahmaji is producing Vedas, what does it mean? Vedas are intelligent sound. So that potential through which intelligent sound can be produced is Brahmaji. So Brahmaji's form is comprised of that potential to create intelligence. It's not just intelligence as such. It is a potential energy by which intelligent sound can be produced. So this comes in the second canto. I think somewhere in... So when does he... That handshake episode, where, which chapter, which canto is it? 2.9, no? So check somewhere in 2.8 or 2.9. Or after the class, I'll search. I have it noted down somewhere. So that is Brahmaji's form. So why did we come to Brahmaji's form? So basically, when Krama Mukti happens, all these living entities, they leave that the external coverings and then they go there. So when you say merging into Brahmaji's form, is they all become one in that aspect, in that Vaikarika potential, and from there they merge into the form of Mahavishnu, like that. So that is what it means when you say merging. It is not that they have lost their individual identity. They still all, the concept of losing identity is a bogus philosophy. It doesn't happen. They all are together in that one. They are all synchronous in their intelligence. That's what it means, like that. So anyway, okay, let's take a quick... Okay, so in summary, what we saw so far, we'll repeat so that we can... First four verses we saw, the fallacy of Sakama Karma. So that is pretty straightforward. Then, text number 5, we saw that how the Nivritti mark, the Nisanga Nyastha Karmanaha Prashanta Shuddha Chetasa, how the Shuddha Chetasas, how 5 and 6 talk about that, how they are doing that Nivritti path. 7th talks about how they take the path of the sun. 8 talks about the Hiranyagarbha worshippers. Then in 9 we saw that how Avyakritim, they enter into the spiritual sky. Then they attain Brahma Pradhanam. In text number 10 we saw that. But then these are all an indirect process, because even to enter into that Brahma Pradhan also there is a little... Actually, it makes more sense after 10 if you read 12 to 15 and then see 11 as a conclusion. Then it will be logical, it will fit into the flow. Because 12 to 15 talks about how even to enter into that Brahman there is a little risk factor involved. Right? There's a chance of again coming down. Even great yogic teachers and demigods and sages also come down. So therefore, better is bhakti, which is a direct process, which is given in text number 11. So that's basically the conclusion of all that we discussed so far since morning. So simple, right? Now, again, the Sakama Karmis, which are known as now Karma Asakta Manasas. Karma asakta is jinke man mein karma ke liye asakti hai, they are criticized. This is from text number 16 to 22. Next 7 verses will be criticizing them. Same people who were spoken of in the first 4 verses of this chapter. Text number 16. ಯೇತ್ವೇ ಇಹಾಸಕ್ತ ಮನಸಃ ಕರ್ಮಸು ಶ್ರದ್ಧಯಾನ್ವಿತಾಃ ಕುರ್ವಂತಿ ಅಪ್ರತಿಸಿದ್ಧಾನಿ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಪಿ ಚ ಕೃಷ್ಣನಃ.
Persons who are too addicted to this material world execute their prescribed duties very nicely and with great faith. They daily perform all such prescribed duties with attachment to the fruitive result.
So in this and the following six verses, Srimad Bhagavatam criticizes persons who are too materially attached. So that is the same which we saw earlier. So these are the people who worship the demigods for upliftment. So next verse talks about how they are Pitru worshippers. Rajasa kuntha manasaha kamatmano jitendriyah pitrin yajanti anudinam griheshva abhiratashayah.
Such persons impelled by the mode of passion are full of anxieties and always aspire for sense gratification due to uncontrolled senses. They worship the forefathers and are busy day and night improving the economic condition of their family, social or national life.
Like that. So these are kamatmanha, rajasa, kuntha manasa, right? This is their qualifications, characteristics. And what do? They are pitrin yajanti anudinam. Every day they worship. You must have seen, right? In many traditional Indian homes, if you go, they have full family portrait. Five generations photographs are there, or painting or whatever, like that. So, huh? South India, it's very popular actually. Yeah. And then not only are they Pitru worshippers, they are completely averse to hearing Harikatha. That is the next characteristic, test number 18. Traivargikaste purusha vimukha harimedhasaha kathayam kathaniyoru vikramasya madhudvishaha.
Such persons are called Trivargika because they are interested in the three elevating processes. They are averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who can give relief to the conditioned soul. They are not interested in the Supreme Personality's pastimes which are worth hearing because of His transcendental prowess.
What are the three elevating processes? Dharma, Artha and Kama, not Moksha. They are not interested in that, like that. So such people who are averse to Harikatha, they are compared to... If they are averse to Harikatha, they must be attached to something else, right? What is that? The worldly talk and worldly matters, so which is like stool. So they are compared to stool-eating pigs. That is in the next verse. Noonam daivena vihata yecha yuchuta katha sudham hitva shrinvanti asadgathaha purisham iva vidbujaha.
Such persons are condemned by the supreme order of the Lord because they are averse to the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are compared to stool-eating hogs. They give up hearing the transcendental activities of the Lord and indulge in hearing of the abominable activities of materialistic persons.
So if you offer nice rabdi and basundi to a hog, it will reject that and it will go and eat stool. So these vidbujas are like that. These materialists are like that, who give up. So Prabhupada writes that how materialistic persons are very interested in reading such literature, but when they are presented with genuine books like Bhagavatam, Vishnu Puran, Bhagavad Gita, or even Bible and Quran, they are not interested. Right? They don't want to read any genuine books. They only want to read newspapers, novels, and etc. Like that. Literature, nonsensical literature, stories and books of speculative philosophy. They want to read that. So what happens to such people? They go to Pitraloka, again come back. So like that, their ferris wheel continues. Dakshinena patharyamana patharyamana pitralokan vrajantite prajam anuprajayante smashantakriyakrita.
Such materialistic persons are allowed to go to the planet called Pitraloka by sudden course of the sun. But they again come back to this planet and take birth in their own families, beginning again the same fruitive activities from birth to the end of life.
Like that. So they go up, they go to Pityanti Devavrata Devan, Pittinvanti Pitruvatan. So they go to Pitrilokas, but then finally, again they have to come back. Like that. So, patanti vivashaha. Helplessly they again fall down. That is spoken in the next verse. Tatastekshina sukritaha. Punarlokam imam sati. Patanti vivasha devehi. Sadyo vibraham shitodayaha.
When the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they fall down by higher arrangement and again come back to this planet. Just as any person raised to a high position, sometimes all of a sudden falls.
Like that. So therefore, an intelligent person will not take up to this path. So what will he do? What is the best thing to do then? Bhakti. So next verse is conclusion. So text number 11 was like a conclusion of Nivritti is this, 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 this. Therefore do bhakti. Text number 22 is Pravritti is this, 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 this. Therefore do bhakti. So that is now coming up in text number 22. Tasmatvam sarva bhavena bhajasva parameshtinam tadgunashraya bhaktya gunashraya bhaktya bhajaniya padambujam.
My dear mother, I therefore advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for His lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service.
Like that. So Prabhupada here, he talks about every word that is there. So tasmat from sarva bhavena, with full bhava. What is sarva bhavena means? In all loving ecstasy. This bhava is a preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. Dadami buddhi yogantam. Now what is it? Verse. Buddha bhava samanvita. So that Prabhupada quotes there. Then tasmat sarva bhavena bhajasva parameshtinam. Parameshti here means the supreme person. Tad guna ashraya bhaktya. Tad guna ashraya bhaktya means that discharging devotional service unto Krishna is transcendental. It is not material. Bhajaniya padam bhujam. Like that. So Prabhupada writes here, devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the only means for attaining the highest perfection of life for human being. Bhakti is nirguna, free from all tinges of material qualities. Therefore, the discharge of devotional service appears to be like material activities, but it is never saguna or contaminated by material qualities. This is an important point. The Mayavadis, they claim that bhakti or Bhagwan Ishvara is saguna Brahman. And bhakti is also saguna process. Ultimately, beyond bhakti is gyan. You have to finally take shelter of gyan. That is also highlighted in the next verse. Very next verse actually talks about that. We'll see that also. How actually gyan and vairagya automatically come by bhakti. That is highlighted in the next section. So therefore, this bhakti is transcendent. It is not within the gunas. It is not saguna, but it is nirguna. So tat guna ashraya means that Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so sublime that there is no need to divert one's attention to any other activities. Like that, by taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both prosperity, material and spiritual. Then why one should go to any other demigod? So both the benefits of pravritti and nivritti one can get by worshipping Krishna. Why go to any other demigod? So with that he concludes the pravritti nivritti comparison and analysis. Then, starting from this part on, this chapter proceeds towards explaining how bhakti gives all perfections and how even jnana also culminates in bhakti only. That is highlighted here. So text number 23 to 27 is glorification of bhakti. So what is the first thing bhakti does? Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Yat Brahma Darshanam. Like that. So what does bhakti give you? Brahma Darshanam. Like that. Translation?
Engagement in Krishna consciousness and application of devotional service unto Krishna makes it possible to advance in knowledge and detachment as well as in self-realization.
So, Brahma Darshanam here means self-realization. It is said by less intelligent men that Bhakti Yoga is meant for persons who are not advanced in Jnana and Vairagya. But the fact is that if one engages in devotional service of Lord in full Krishna consciousness, he does not have to attempt separately to practice detachment. Or wait for awakening of Jnana. So, Jane, what is the word that says that one doesn't have to wait? Ashu. Ashu means immediately. So, Janayati Ashu. Immediately, Jnana and Vairagya comes when one starts the process of Bhakti. For arriving at the positive conclusions of knowledge and the absolute truth, the word Brahma Darshanam is very significant. Brahma Darshanam means to realize or to understand the transcendence. One who engages in service of Vasudev can actually realize what Brahman is. If Brahman is impersonal, then there is no question of darshanam, which means seeing face to face. Darshanam means there has to be a person, right? So how can you take darshan of Brahman? If you have to see, means it has to have some qualities to see. So that is a proof of the personal aspect that we are talking about Lord Vasudev here. Like that. Next is a very nice purport. Text number 24. Yadasya chittam martheshu sameshvindriya vrittibhi navignati vaishamyam priyam apriyam ityuta.
The exalted devotee's mind becomes equipoised in sensory activities. And he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable.
So, such a devotee who is Vasudeva Bhagavati, he is transcends both Priya and Apriya, favorable, unfavorable, agreeable, disagreeable things in. So, how does it happen? So, Prabhupada writes a nice purport here. The significance of advancement in transcendental knowledge and detachment from material attraction is exhibited in the personality of a highly advanced devotee. The perfection of Jnana and Vairagya can only be seen in a pure Bhakta. Why? Because for him there is nothing agreeable or disagreeable because he does nothing for his own personal sense gratification. Whatever he does, whatever he thinks is for the satisfaction of this personality of Godhead. Either in the material world or in spiritual world, his equipoised mind is completely manifested. He can understand that in the material world there is nothing good. Everything is bad due to being contaminated by material nature. Right? So he is equipoised in the sense that he sees everything material world as bad. Samadarshi. Everything is useless here in material world. Nothing worth working for in the material world. Right? Then what does he say? He can understand that the materialist conclusion of good and bad, moral and immoral, etc. are simply mental concoction or sentiments. Actually, there is nothing good in the material world. In the spiritual world, everything is absolutely good. There is no inability in the spiritual varieties. Because a devotee accepts everything in spiritual vision, he is equipoised. That is a symptom of one who is in the platform of Jnana and Vairagya. That is what it means. Because he does not see anything worth aspiring for, nor does he see anything worth detesting in the material realm, he is completely equipoised, samadarshi in his vision. That is the point. So that can only happen with spiritual vision. Real equipoisedness, equipoised vision comes only with spiritual understanding. It cannot come with, no matter how much mental adjustments that we may do or intellectual understanding that we may have, you cannot be equipoised. Real equipoisedness comes by spiritual vision. Then, so how does he become transcendentally neutral? That is described in the next verse. Satadaivatma atmanam nissangam samadarshanam heyopadeya rahitam arudham padam ikshate.
Because of this transcendental intelligence, the pure devotee is equipoised in his vision and sees himself to be uncontaminated by matter. He does not see anything as superior or inferior, and he feels himself elevated the transcendental platform of being equal in qualities with the Supreme Person.
So because of his Atmana Atmanam, because he has of his superior intelligence, transcendental intelligence, he develops his vision of equipoiseness. So Prabhupada writes a nice line here. Perception of the disagreeable arises from attachment. What a powerful statement here. Perception, first of all, it is not genuinely agreeable or disagreeable also. Even that is also perception. I like something. When a person makes a statement like that, it is also perception that I feel, I am perceiving that this is not good for me or this is something that I do not like. Even that perception arises out of attachment. So a devotee has no personal attachment to anything. Therefore for him there is no question of agreeable or disagreeable. Okay, you want me to do this? Okay, I will do it. You want me to do this service? Okay, I will do it. Because finally it is not for my, it's like completely neutral, he is his position. So such a pure devotee enjoys life in the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Because another understanding of neutrality means that he's like a stone. Completely feelingless, emotionless, no, that is not what it means. He is completely, he is enjoying, he has feelings and emotions, but they are all, he is enjoying in the Supreme Lord, like that. So therefore, so many aspects, so many forms of Lord may be there, but finally it is one God, that is highlighted in the next verse. Jnanamatram param brahma paramatmeshwarah puman drishyabhihi pritagbhaver bhagavan eka iyate.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is complete transcendental knowledge, but according to the different processes of understanding, he appears differently, either as impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or as the Purusha Avatara.
Like that. So, Jnana Matram, only because of knowledge, right, and Drishya Adibhi here is translated as philosophical research. Only because of this philosophical perspectives, philosophical worldviews, one actually sees the same one God in different forms. What are different forms? Param Brahma, Paramatmesh, Ishvara Puman, Bhagavan, like that. So as Param Brahma, as Paramatma and as Bhagavan. But, so Param Brahma, Paramatma and Ishvara, these are the three ways of seeing Bhagavan Eka Iyate. That one Bhagavan is seen in these different aspects. The word Drishyadibhi is significant. According to Jiva Goswami, Drishi means Jnana, philosophical research. By different process of philosophical research under different concepts, such as the process of Jnana Yoga, the same Bhagavan or Supreme Personality of God is understood as impersonal Brahman. Similarly, in Eightfold Yoga, he is seen as Paramatma. But in pure Krishna consciousness or knowledge in purity, he is seen as one absolute truth. Ultimately, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one has to accept Bhakti Yoga. By executing Jnana or Dhyana Yoga, one has to eventually approach the Bhakti Yoga platform. And then Paramatma, Ishvara, Puman, etc. are all clearly understood. Like that. So here Prabhupada writes, even if someone desires at all to merge into the existence of the Supreme, he has to execute devotional service. Even for Brahman merging also, one has to execute devotional service. The devotee can see the Supreme Lord face to face, but the jnani, the empiric philosopher or yogi cannot do. Nor by executing yogic principles can one become associate of Supreme Lord. Have you ever heard any yogi or a jnani becoming intimate associate of the Lord? Parshad of the Lord? Never. Have you ever heard any devotee giving up bhakti and coming to jnana and yoga? Ashtanga yoga? Anyone? You are thinking very hard. Koi hai? Nahi hai. No one. So Prabhupada writes this argument in One Chaitanya Charitamrita Purport. In the history of all the mankind, not a single devotee came down and became, in that Atma Ramasya Munayo verse in Madhya Leela, 61 explained Atma Rama, in that chapter he writes, never has one devotee come down to the process of, you know, Jnana or Yoga. But there are so many cases of Atmaramas, Jnani Atmaramas and Yogi Atmaramas, who got attracted. Ittam Bhuyad Guno Hari. They got attracted to Krishna's qualities and they became devotees. That shows bhakti is the topmost. Like that. So like that. So all this, basically it is Jnana Matram, Drishyadivi. Only because of philosophical speculation, one sees his different aspects. But otherwise it is just that one Bhagavan only. And all the different processes are there. So many processes of yoga are there, which we discussed in the beginning of the class, which you all pointed out. But ultimately, what is the whole essence, crux of all that yoga is? Is not every yoga talks about bhakti. What is common to all processes of yoga? Detachment, yes. That is highlighted in the next verse. एतावन एव योगेन समग्रेनेन योगिनः युज्यते अभिमतो ह्यर्थो यत् असंगस्तु कृष्टसः.
The greatest common understanding for all yogis is complete detachment from matter, which can be achieved by different kinds of yoga.
Like that. So there are different aspects of God because of the drishyadivihi, but ultimately, and they are different. There may be different yoga process to realize each of the aspects. Like Jnana Yoga, you realize Brahman. Karma Yoga, you realize Ishwar. Ashtanga Yoga, you realize Paramatma. But finally, the essential principle of all systems of yoga is asangastu. Not just any kind of asanga. It is complete detachment. Krishna Saha. Asangastu Krishna Saha. Complete detachment is what is the goal of all this, like that. So, Prabhupada writes, there are three kinds of yoga, namely bhakti, jnana and ashtanga. Jnana yogi, so how they attain detachment, that is highlighted in the purport here. Jnana yogi thinks that matter is false and that Brahman is truth. Brahma satyam jagan mithya. Therefore, by cultivation of knowledge, he detaches himself from material enjoyment. A mystic yogi simply tries to control the senses by practicing the eight divisions of yoga, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, etc. And that is how he controls his senses. Whereas a devotee tries to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. So because this is the easiest and the most direct process, that is the bhakti yoga is the best. The easiest and most direct process is to engage the senses in service of the Lord. Therefore, bhakti is the most direct. Rest all are indirect. Like yesterday's analysis also we saw, right? There is a forced treatment of overcoming amnesia, or there is an easy treatment. So bhakti is the most direct and easiest process. The purpose of all yoga is to detach one's sense activities from this material world. And the final aims, however, are very different. Jnanis want to become one with Brahman, yogis want to realize Paramatma, and devotees want to develop Krishna consciousness and transcendental loving service to the Lord. That loving service is the perfect stage of sense control. Another example Prabhupada gives is, so many yogis and so many jnanis who are in the perfected stage have fallen down. But you see example of Haridas Thakur. Maya Devi herself, in that Maya Devi purport he writes, that Adi Leela 4th chapter I think it's, Madhya Leela 4th chapter I think, 4th or 6th, yeah. So there, Maya Devi herself has come to allure Haridas Thakur. But what did Haridas Thakur do? He made Maya Devi only his disciple. Like that. So that is the power of a devotee. That is the perfect stage of sense control. Right? Now, if you see, in text number 26, Kapila Muni used the process of, he used the word Jnana Matram and Drishyadibhi, which means philosophical speculation. Right? He has all of a sudden brought the concept of Jnana Yoga. Nivritti mein humne kya dekha abhi tak? What did we see? We saw the three things. Nishkama Karma, Virata Purusha and Hiranyagarbha. Three things we saw. Jnana Yoga was nowhere spoken about, though it is like there as an undercurrent. But here explicitly he used the word Jnana. So Devahuti, Mother Devahuti, she got a doubt in her mind. What is this jnana process, this non-dualistic process, is it something separate from bhakti? Or jnana also has to culminate in bhakti? Because everything you have explicitly mentioned, you have not spoken anything about jnana separately. So I would like to know about jnana. So as Paramatma in the heart, Kapila Muni understood her mother's intention. By the way, this is all Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, not my interpretation. You may be wondering, are Prabhuji ko kaisa pata chal gaya? So Mother Devahuti Vishwa Chakravarti writes that she got a doubt. You have explained everything. Can you please explain about Gyan now? So therefore, next 5 verses, he is going to 28 to 32. He is going to talk about this non-dualistic Gyan and how that also culminates in bhakti.
Twenty-six, twenty-seven, we discussed Gyan. Then how she could get that doubt?
Yeah. No, in this context, because in terms of how, though in every chapter, supremacy of bhakti has been established, but explicitly in this presentation, this is like a summary presentation of the whole, all the teachings of Lord Kapila are summarized. So, usme there is no, in the summary study, there is no explicit mention of Gyan. So, therefore, she asked this question like that. So now we are going to throw one more term for all of you. Key term, one more key word. It is called as Artha Rupa. Rupa means form. Artha means? To jo dharma artha ka jo artha jo hai. Yani these different forms which exist for one's material enjoyment. Those are Artha Rupas. The thing is, the Mayavadis, they reject all Rupa. But we reject Artha Rupas. So in the next, so what is our philosophy Mahaprabhu gave? Huh? Na, Achintya? Bedha Abheda. So which means simultaneous, inconceivable, simultaneous? Oneness and difference. So now the inconceivable oneness will be explained. So these next 5 verses, how there is a simultaneous oneness is brought out. And Prabhupada also in the purport very nicely, he brings out different examples of oneness that are there. So text number 28. Jnanam ekam parachiner indriyer brahma nirgunam avabhatyartha rupena Bhrantya Shabdadi Dharmina.
Those who are averse to the transcendence realize the supreme absolute truth differently through speculative sense perception. And therefore, because of mistaken speculation, everything appears to them to be relative.
Yeah. So Bhranti Shabdi Shabda Adi Dharmina. So they give different names. This is a man, this is a woman, this is an Indian, this is an American, this is that, this is the, they identified with different shabdas and with the different rupas that they associate. And that is how they get bewildered. So because of that speculative sense perception. The supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead is one. And he is spread everywhere by his impersonal feature. This is clearly expressed in Bhagavad Gita. Really? Where is it mentioned? Where is it mentioned that the Supreme Lord is one and is spread everywhere by his impersonal feature? Maya sarvam idam tadam jagat avyakta murtina. Avyakta murti here is an impersonal feature. This is clearly explained in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna says, everything that is experience is but an expansion of my energy. Everything is sustained by him, but that does not mean that he is in everything. Sensory knowledge is divided in different categories. Although actually everything is one as a manifestation of the energy of the Supreme Lord, similarly, the energies of fire and heat are an illumination, and by these two energies, fire can display itself in many varieties or in diversified sense perceptions. So when I look at fire, there is actually fire, but then I say, oh, I am feeling the warmth of the fire. I am feeling warmth. Right now we are feeling hot. Are you all feeling hot now? No, you are feeling the sun. This is Ardha Rupena. You are not actually feeling hot. Hot is not, heat is not something separate. You are actually experiencing the sun. Like that. Are you all feeling thirsty? What are you feeling? Huh? Are you all feeling hungry? No, you are feeling the sun. Because the sun has made you tired. And what is food? What is food? Food is energy of sun. So you want sun. Are you all feeling bored? What are you feeling? You are feeling sun. Like that. So that is what. So in the material world, sun is as good as everything for us. Within the perspective of the planet, sun is everything. Like that. So in the cosmological sense, ultimately everything is Krishna. But moment we fail to see that connection, we give different forms. Of course, this is not in the Mayavadi sense that everything is Krishna. That's why Prabhupada clarifies, everything is sustained by him, but that does not mean that he is in everything. But the Mayavadi philosophers declare this diversity to be false, but Vaishnava philosophers do not accept the different manifestations as false. They accept them as non-different from the personality of Godhead because they are display of his diverse energies. So what is this philosophy called? I mentioned last time. What is our Vaishnava philosophy called in comparison to Mayavad philosophy? Yes, the Sanskrit term. That is their philosophy. Now what is our philosophy where we say that these are all energies of God? Shakti Parinama Vada. Shakti Parinama Vada. This is our thing. They say Vivartavada. So they say that, see, Brahman is unchangeable. Right? Brahman does not change. That is how the Vedas describe. If Brahman does not change, then how can all these vikaras take place and material creation take place? Right? We studied, right? Creation means all vikaras are taking place. Transformations are taking place. If Brahman is unchangeable, then how can the creation then take place? So somebody asked this question to Shankaracharya. After he established full theory, one scholar asked him that, how do you explain creation then? Then what did Shankaracharya say? What creation? There is no creation. Over, end of argument. So that creation, what you are saying as creation is vivarta. Vivarta means illusion. So their philosophy is called Vivartavada. But then our Vaishnavacharya say, no, this is energy of Krishna. Brahman does not transform, but Ishwara's energies have potential to transform. Parasha Shakti Vivdevi Shruyate. They quote this verse. Therefore, Shakti Parinama, Shakti can transform. Shakti Man does not transform. He is unchangeable. But Shaktis can transform. Therefore, creation, that is how it takes place, by transformation of Krishna's energies. That is the point. So therefore, the philosophy that the absolute is true and this creation is false, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, is not accepted by Vaishnava philosophers. The example is given that all that glitters is not gold. This does not mean that all glittering objects is false. For example, an oyster shell appears to be, well, actually it looks silver, but because there are six analogies that Shankaracharya uses to prove his, so one of the famous one is this, rope and snake we all know. Another analogy is oyster and silver. Somebody looking at an oyster from an oyster, pata hai kya hota by the way? Kabhi moti jo banta hai, ek clam jaisa ek aata hai, shell jaise dikhta hai wo. Seashell ki tarah dikhta hai. Shells, so what do you say seashells in Hindi? Shank nahi hai, but huh? Okay, shimpla. Okay. So the oyster shell, because of the texture on the oyster shell, when the light falls on it, it looks a little silverish. So he says that silver and oyster, he gives that comparison. But once you realize that actually it is oyster, then there is no more silver there. But there is a problem in this analogy. If silver is not in the oyster, but silver has to be somewhere else. There is, silver is real. The illusion of silver is may not be real in the oyster. But in the factually, there is some silver somewhere. So that is what Prabhupada also says here. The example given here is all the glitters is not gold. For example, an oyster shell appears to be golden. The appearance of golden hue is only due to perception of the eyes, but that does not mean that oyster shell is false. The form of Krishna has to be understood, and it is described in the books of knowledge. Material sense speculation leads to the conclusion that the Supreme is formless. It is because of such mental speculation that the conditioned soul remains in ignorance under the spell of illusory energy. Like that. So before, the formless Brahman conception, however, can be received only by oral reception and not by personal experience. Even to understand Brahman, one has to have Shastra Brahman for that. So all these different Artharupas, where are they coming from? Lord's energy. So that is, so the categories of this Lord energy is highlighted in the next verse. Text 29. Yatha mahan aham rupas trivit pancha vidha swarat ekadasha vidhastasya vapurandam jagadyataha.
From the total energy, the Mahatattva, I have manifested the false ego, the three modes of material nature, the five material elements, the individual consciousness, the 11 senses and the material body. Similarly, the entire universe has come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So like that. So, the Supreme Lord is described as Mahatpada, which means the total energy, which is known as Mahatattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is a cause of the Mahatattva. Therefore, in one sense, because everything is manifestation from the Lord, there is no difference between Lord and the cosmic manifestation. But at the same time, the cosmic manifestation is different from the Lord. Like that. So in the next paragraph now, very nice paragraph. I mean, there's only one paragraph, but next part of the paragraph, Prabhupada talks about all the oneness and the difference. So the point, okay. So is the Supreme Lord Swarat? Are we Swarat? Yes, to some extent. Do we have a material body? Does the Supreme Lord have a material body? Does the Supreme Lord have a material body? Yes, in the form of Virata. Is our body temporary? The Supreme Lord's body temporary? Yes, the Virat's body is temporary. Is our body formed out of the spiritual spark? Spiritual spark is the seed around which the body is formed? Yes. Does the Supreme Lord's body also form around a spiritual spark? Yes. What is that spiritual spark? Okay. The universal super soul. Okay. Then, like that. So just as the individual soul has consciousness, the super soul is the Supreme Soul is also conscious, like that. So like that, but then, what is the difference then, if this is all the oneness aspect? What is the difference? Quantity, very good. Then, am I conscious of my body? Am I conscious of your body? The Supreme Soul is conscious of everybody. Everybody. Like that. So like that. And he further about 13th chapter also Kshetra, Kshetragya, his Supreme Kshetragya, we are Anu Kshetragya, like that. So this is the one. So very nice paragraph, this one you should read. I just summarized it, but you can read it in detail. So what are we discussing? Remember? Gyan. Right. So that is why all this oneness is coming. Right? But then the jnani is perfection of samadhi, even that comes by bhakti only. That is highlighted in the next verse. Etadvai shraddhaya bhaktya yogabhyasena nityasah samahitatma nishango viraktya paripashyati.
This perfect knowledge can be achieved by a person who is already engaged in devotional service with faith, steadiness and full detachment, and who is always absorbed in thought of the Supreme. He is aloof from material association.
So that is the point. Etadvai shraddhaya bhaktya. With that bhakti with shraddha only, yoga pyasena nitya saha, by regular practice, samahita atma means it is the same as samadhi. Prabhupada writes like that. The word samahita atma and samadhi are synonymous. So even the atheistic mystic performer of yoga cannot understand this perfect knowledge. Only persons who engage with devotional service in full Krishna consciousness can become absorbed in full samadhi. That is the point. Etadvai shraddhaya bhaktya. Like that. So vai here means certainly. So definitely with like, it's like an assertion. Pakka. Like that. Then. So now he kind of like summarizes the jnana section in the next two verses to his mother. Ityetat kathitam gurvi. Jnanam tad brahma darshanam. Yenanubudhyate tattvam. Prakrite purushasya cha.
My dear respectful mother, I have already described the path of understanding the absolute truth, by which one can come to understand the real truth of matter and spirit and the relationship.
Right. So these words, Prakriti and Purusha, are key words, because in the Sankhya philosophy, these are the, like how their philosophy is centered on Prakriti and Purusha understanding. Like they have, Mayavadis have Brahman and Maya. What do we have? Bhagavan, Bhakti, we have three aspects, but broadly Bhagavan and Bhakta. Prakriti in Purusha is the feminine and masculine energies, is the Sankhya understanding of things. So they, all their writings and teachings are based on these two concepts. Prakriti Purusha, that is how they explain. Or Kshetra, Kshetra Gyan, these are also Sankhya terminologies. Like that. So here is little general knowledge for all of you. So the process of jnana, why I'm explaining this is because it's important in the next, to understand the next purport. So in the process of jnana, there are seven stages. This is based on Varaha Upanishad. It's extra information only. They are called as bhumikas. There are seven bhumikas belonging to the path of jnana yoga. So what are they? The first, it begins with what is called as, like how we have Adho, Shraddha, Tata, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, Andhari, Nishtha, Ruchi, Bhava, Prema. They have seven stages. First stage is called as Shubha Ichha. Which means, pehle, apna jaise Shraddha hai, unka Ichha hai. Ichha se chalu hota hai unka. Deep desire for enlightenment. Right? So so Shubha Ichha also has some six stages. Yes. What are they? Sama, Dama, Tapasya, Uparati, Swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhana. These are the six stages within the Shubha Ichha. Then after developing the Shubha Ichha, then they do Vichar. Inquire into the self. Vicharana. Then after they do Vicharan, they progress to the stage of Tanu Manasi. Tanu Manasi means the mind becomes like thin. Tanu manasi means little bit thinning of the mind. Which means mind ko pura control kar dete hain log. That is, mind is settled. Then sattva apatti. Then the mind becomes full of sattva guna. So they attain full purity of their thought and action. Then once they become so pure, what then they progress to a stage known as asam shakti. Asam Sakti is less like Anasakti. Complete detachment, because they are completely focusing on the self, they are completely detached from everything else. So at Sattvapatti stage, they still have all the four, the three karmas, Sanchit Karma, Prarabdha Karma, Agami Karma. But in Asam Sakti stage, slowly the other karmas vanish and only the Prarabdha Karma remains. Then they enter the stage known as Padartha. Which means, this Patartha also has a name. different name. It is anyway, I'll refer that later and tell you. Basically, Padhartha means they become, they start absorbing into the bliss of Brahman. That is the stage only last traces of Prarabdha Karma are left. And finally, the stage is Turiya. Turiya we heard, right? Bhaji wala nahi hai, alag wala. Where did we hear the word Turiya? Order mein, order mein. Jagriti, Swapna, Shushupti, Turiya. Wakeful, dreaming, deep sleep, transcendence. These are the four stages of consciousness. So then they enter into Turiya. Then they say, as soon as a person enters Turiya, his Prarabdha Karma is also gone. Which means, if Prarabdha Karma is gone, means what happens? Bye bye. Body is gone in 21 days. That is what their understanding is. So that is, so this whole, this is the, these are the seven bhumikas of the Jnana Marga. So, but then, the next verse is connecting to that. Jnana yogascha mannishto nairgunyo bhakti lakshanaha dvayorapi eka evartho bhagavat shabdha lakshanaha.
Philosophical research culminates in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After achieving this understanding, when one becomes free from the material modes of nature, he attains the stage of devotional service. Either by devotional service, directly, or by philosophical research, one has to find the same destination, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
That is the point. By Jnana Yoga, even if you come to the stage of perfection of Turiya, still you have to, you are looking at that same conclusion what a Bhakti Yogi also comes to. That is looking at understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If by philosophical research one cannot come to the point of understanding the Supreme Person, then his task is not finished. His search in knowledge is still to be continued. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. He has to come to that point. Bahunam Janvanamante Jnanavan Vam Prapadyante. He has to come to understanding of Vasudeva. Then he comes to the point of understanding the Supreme Lord in devotional service. So one can achieve the result of wise philosophical speculation simply by discharging devotional service, and unless one reaches the point of understanding the personality of Godhead by his mental speculation, all his research work is said to be simply a labor of love. The ultimate destination of the wise philosopher is to merge in the impersonal Brahman, but that Brahman is effulgence of the Supreme Person. Like that. So even the process of Jnana. So now we have comprehensively, we have proved that whatever path of spirituality is there, it has to culminate in bhakti only. So better, right? So imagine, it's like somebody is telling you, okay, today we have to go to Chopati, right? And you have the following options. Option A, you can, listen. Option A, you can hitchhike to Tennaka, and from Tennaka you can take another auto to Virar Phata, and from Virar Phata you can take another bus or some lorry till Mumbai Central, and in Mumbai Central you have to board the tempo traveler and come to temple. Option 2, you can, there's another vehicle which will directly drop you in Virar Phata, and from Virar Phata you take another vehicle, go to Mumbai Central, and Mumbai Central you have to board the tempo traveler. Option C, there's a tempo traveler leaving from here, you can directly board it and go. So like that. So better take the easiest and the direct process. So Bhakti Yoga is like that. Ultimately all of them are coming to the tempo traveler only. So might as well take it from beginning. Like that. Huh? You have to pay more also for other paths. For you, tempo traveler is free. Don't worry. So like that. So then the next four verses, all these different multiple ways of realizing God are summarized in a very nice way. like that. So there are so many sections in this, because this is like a conclusion, huh? This is like the last chapter of Kapila Muni's thesis. So last chapter mein pura conclusion, you see multiple sections here. This is the fifth section I think we are doing now, right? Okay, text number 33, very important verse.
यथेन्द्रिय पृथक द्वारे अर्थो बहुगुणाश्रय एको नान्यते तद्वत् भगवान शास्त्रवर्त्मभिः.
A single object is appreciated differently by different senses due to its having different qualities. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, but according to different scriptural injunctions, he appears to be different.
Right? Nice verse, right? It's a good Shastric Praman for you to quote anywhere. It appears that by following the path of Jnana Yoga, we'll read the whole purport. Jnana Yoga or empirical philosophical speculation, one reaches the impersonal Brahman, whereas by executing devotional service, one enriches his faith in personality of Godhead. But it is stated here that both Bhakti Yoga and Jnana Yoga are meant for reaching the same destination. By the process of Jnana Yoga, the same Supreme Personality of Godhead appears to be impersonal. And the same object appears to be different when perceived by different senses. The same Supreme Lord appears to be impersonal by mental speculation. So Prabhupada gives the example of the hill. When you look at a hill from here, from Google Earth, if you look at Galtare, if you look at Govardhan Eco Village from Google Earth, what will you see? You will see a green patch. If you zoom closer and closer, like you can zoom on Google Earth, right? If you zoom, you will start seeing, oh, there are trees and there are also buildings. And if you start zooming further, then you will say, oh, there are buildings and there are people in the building also. Like that. So, these are all different perspectives of looking at the same thing. So, likewise, Prabhupada gives another example of milk. So if I ask you, what is milk? What are different ways in which you can perceive milk? What are different ways you can perceive milk? White color. Taste. Smell. Wet. Or kya? I don't know, if you put it in the ear, what happens? It's scientific formula. It's nutritional content. There are so many things that you can do. Right? Likewise, the same one Supreme Lord has different aspects, has different features. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, Ishvara, so on and so forth. But finally everything is milk, which means everything is one. Then how will you show that the supremacy of bhakti here? What is the best way to know milk? Drink it. So tongue is the best way to know the milk. Likewise, even though there are so many ways of knowing milk, bhakti is the best way of knowing the Supreme Lord. The perfection of milk is in tasting. The perfection of understanding the Lord is by engaging in devotional service. Like that. So Prabhupada writes that in the example. So just as one can, this second paragraph. Ultimately, the Supreme Person is a destination of all process. The fortunate person who, by following the principles of scriptures, becomes completely purified, surrenders to the Lord. Just as one can appreciate the real taste of milk with the tongue and not with the eyes, nostrils, ears, one can similarly appreciate the absolute truth perfectly. Therefore, bhaktya mam abhijanati. No one can understand the absolute truth in all perfection. That is not possible by the infinitesimal living entity. So that is the point. You can, even a bhakta cannot know the Lord completely. Why bhakta? Even Bhagwan himself doesn't know about himself completely. Right? So, but the highest point of understanding where the living entity is reached by discharge of devotional service and not otherwise. Like that. Therefore, last paragraph it talks how Prabodhananda Saraswati says that even though Brahmananda is so, it's like incomparable compared to what highest material happiness can give you. right? But even that Brahmananda is, that Kaivalya is Narakayate for the devotees like that. Therefore, last line, without bhakti, neither Jnana Yoga nor Ashtanga Yoga can be successful unless one approaches Krishna. The principles of self-realization have no ultimate destination. So even if you don't understand anything in the chapter, if you just understand this one sentence, the perfection of this chapter is attained. Like that. Now, text number 34 to 36, all the different techniques are nicely summarized. We'll read the translation directly. By performing fruitive activities and sacrifices, by distributing charity, by performing austerities. Okay, let's do it in sequence. Okay, who performs fruitive activities and sacrifices and charity? Okay, who performs austerities by studying various literatures? Who conducts, who controls the mind by subduing the senses? And who accepts the renounced order of life and by performing prescribed duties of one's social order? So the first answer you gave was Grihasthas. Second answer of studying scriptures is Brahmacharis. Controlling the senses and mind who perform tapasya are the Vanaprasthas. And Sannyasis are those who renounce. So by performing the different divisions of yoga practice, by performing devotional service and by exhibiting the process of devotional service, containing the symptoms of both attachment and detachment, pravritti and nivritti, by understanding the science of self-realization and by developing a strong sense of detachment, one who is expert in understanding the different process of self-realization realizes the Lord as is represented in the material world as well as in transcendence. Like that. So, here Prabhupada in the purport he writes this analogy of a hungry man. Hungry man, what happens when you eat food? Two things happen. That is, three things happen when we read 11th canto, you should give that answer. Right now only two things are happening. Your hunger is vanquished. Your desire to eat more food is vanquished, and you are getting satisfaction also. So one is jnana, other is vairagya. So both jnana and vairagya come by bhakti. Therefore, this understanding of the Supreme Lord is called Atma Tattva Avabodhena. So by understanding Atma Tattva also includes understanding oneself. This last paragraph of that chapter, of that purport. As soon as one is able to see his constitutional position, the word swadrik means one who is able to see oneself, he becomes detached from such material service. Okay, we'll, one second. There's a very interesting thing in this purport. We'll go by the verse once. Read the last verse. Atma tattva avabodhena vairagena dridhena cha iyate bhagavan yebhi saguno nirguna swadrik. So, Atma Tattva Avabodhina, by understanding this Atma Tattva with Vairagya, so apparently it seems, so the previous verse, Yogena Vividhanena Bhakti Yoga Chaivane. So, previous verse talk about Bhakti, first verse is talking about Varnashram principles, next verse is talking about Bhakti, third verse is talking about Vairagya, like the Jnanis. So, is it some kind of a progression one may ask? Does Jnana come after bhakti? Is it higher than bhakti? So that is very nicely clarified in the purport. Because if you read this verse, it may feel like Atma Tattva Avabodhena Vairagyena Dridhena Cha Iyate Bhagavan Evi Saguno Nirguna Swadrik. So ultimately, one has to go beyond Nirguna, like the Mayavadi Nirguna. No, but that is not what the meaning is. How can you become Nirguna? That is there in the last paragraph of the purport. Understanding the Supreme Person is called Atma Tattva Avabodhena, which means understanding of one's real constitutional position. If one actually understands one's constitutional position as eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, he becomes detached from the service of the material world. So that is the point. So when you understand that Jivara Swarupa Krishna Nityadas, then automatically you transcend the three modes and that is how you become nirguna. So by understanding your position, you become nirguna, not by merging or anything like that. Like that. So then, finally, the last section of this chapter, concluding words. So he says, Pravocham Bhakti Yogasya Swarupam Te Chaturvidham Kalasya Chavyaktagater Yo Antar Dhvati Jantushu.
My dear mother, I have explained to you the process of devotional service and its identity in four different social divisions. I have explained to you as well how eternal time is chasing the living entities, although it is imperceptible to them.
So the verse talks about four different social divisions. Prabhupada talks about four different divisions of bhakti. What are the four divisions of bhakti? Tamasik, Rajasik, Sattvik. So the process of bhakti yoga is the main river flowing down towards the sea of the absolute truth. And all other processes are like tributaries. So bhakti is the main tempo traveler. Everything else is joining to it at some point. Like that. And there are four divisions. Three in the modes of nature, one under transcendence. Like that. Then, text number 38. Jivasya samshritir bhavir. Bahvir avidya karma nirmitaha yasvanga pravishannatma naveda gati matmanaha.
There are varieties of material existence for the living entity according to the work he performs in ignorance or forgetfulness of his real identity. My dear mother, if anyone enters into that forgetfulness, he is unable to understand where his movements will end.
Like that. So this is the process of conditioning. There are so many unlimited varieties of species are there according to one's avidya karma nirmitaha. So many are produced. That is how the bondage takes place. But naitat khalyopadishen khalyopadishen now Navinitaya karhichit Nastabdhaya na bhinnaya Naiva dharmam dhvajaya cha.
Lord Kapila continued, this instruction is not meant for the envious, for the agnostics, or for the persons who are unclean in their behavior, nor is it for hypocrites, or for persons who are proud of material possessions.
Nalolu payo padishen nagriharuna chetasa chetase nabhyaktas chame jato namad bhaktya dvisham api.
It is not to be instructed to persons who are too greedy and too attached to family life, nor to persons who are non-devotees and who are envious of the devotees of the personality of Godhead.
So whom all this knowledge should not be given? Envious, agnostics, unclean, hypocrites. Those are proud of material possessions and greedy. Those are too attached to family life. Non-devotees. So aur bacha kaun prachar karne ke liye then? Devotees ko prachar karna hai. To roz baith ke Vidyapeeth class karenge then. Ho gaya. Maintenance department. OPT is creation. Maintenance is separate. Okay. So anyway, so Prabhupada answers that in the purport. We have experienced that some students, why they, first of all, why the warning has been given has to be understood. We have experienced that some students come to join us, but because of being biased in some particular type of faith, they leave our camp and become lost in the wilderness. The first effect. If you give these pure teachings to the unqualified, first thing that will happen to them is they become bewildered. Actually, Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian religious faith. It is a teaching process for understanding Supreme Lord and a relationship with Him. Anyone can join this movement without prejudice. But unfortunately, there are people who feel differently. So it is better not to instruct this science to such people. Dekho, Prabhupada, I mean, this is a very bold statement. Prabhupada never makes statement like this. Even if Krishna says one should not give in Bhagavad Gita, right? What is that verse? Where it says that the wise should not disturb the foolish. But in that purport, Prabhupada, no problem, you can still preach to them. Like that. But here Prabhupada is making this statement. Why? Because you may end up bewildering such people, and even more deeper thing comes next. Generally, materialistic persons are after some name, fame and material gain. If someone takes to Krishna consciousness for these reasons, he will never be able to understand this philosophy. So second effect is, you will not understand this philosophy. So kya hoga? Books up palliya, but philosophy kuch samajh mein nahi hai. You will know everything in the book, but you will not have faith in anything in the book. So that is a great disservice to such a person. Such persons take to religious principles as a social decoration. They admit themselves into some cultural institution for the sake of name only, especially in this age. Such persons also cannot understand philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So basically what will happen is, to such people, so one, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, he said, if you take bath in Radha Kund, you will go to hell. Bhaktisiddhanta said that if you take bath in Radha Kund, you will go to hell. Why? So if you go, then Radha Kund should give you consciousness. It is the topmost thing in entire Braja. Rupa Goswami mentions in NOI. Why you will go to hell if you take bath in Radha Kund? So, because we don't have faith, what will we do? Like today, if you go to Radha Kund appearance day, I think last time I was telling someone, you did this batch? What do they do in Radha Kund appearance day in Vrindavan? Do you know? They throw pumpkins in Radha Kund. Why? The husbands throw pumpkin in the Radha Kund so that their wife gets a pumpkin. So that they get children basically. So Bhaktisiddhanta said that if by mistake if the desire is not fulfilled, what will happen? They will lose faith on Radha Kund. If you lose faith in the topmost thing, what is your chance of getting delivered? Better Pujala Ragapata Gaurava Bhange. Better stay away from these very holy things. The supremely spiritual things, better stay, maintain respectful distance. Therefore, he said, he warned all his disciples, if you go take bath in Radha Kund, you will go to hell. Because what will we do? We'll go and take bath saying, oh, Radharani, please remove all my anarthas, please remove the lust from my heart, please remove the anger from my heart. We go and we jump in Radha Kund, we come back, and then we continue doing our things. Then what will happen? Are, Radha Kund does not work. Slowly you lose faith. Then it's not that you lose faith only in Radha Kund. Slowly you'll say, "Arey, this Krishna conscious process does not work." 10 saal ho gaya. Since 10 years I've been practicing Krishna consciousness, but nothing is happening. Then you get into the, you start updating yourself with all the gossip happening around. You know, I know what happens. Even this big devotees 30 years in the movement. See what all things they are doing. Then you start criticizing Vaishnavas. Then you start committing Vaishnavaparath. Then next time you create gossip about others. And start, you know, even like it's more than aparath. Like straight away, like a crime, you do that. So that is how the degradation takes place. So therefore, Pujala Ragapatha Gaurava Bhange. Better to tread on this path with great respect and reverence. Stay away from these things. That is why Kapil Muni here is warning that this supreme knowledge should not be given to the unqualified. So then who is qualified? Those are the next two verses. What are the qualities of a devotee? Shraddhadhanaya bhaktaya
vinitayanusuyave bhuteshu krita maitraya shushushabhirattaya cha.
Instruction should be given to the faithful devotee who is respectful to the spiritual master, non-envious, friendly to all kinds of living entities and eager to render service with faith and sincerity.
Bahir jata viragaya shanta chittaya diyatam nirmatsaraya shauchaye suchaye yasyaham preshayam priyah.
This instruction should be imparted by the spiritual master to persons who have taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be more dear than anything, who are not envious of anyone, who are perfectly cleansed, and who have developed detachment for that which is outside the purview of Krishna consciousness.
This is the best purport of the entire chapter. Because Prabhupada is talking all practical things, how a devotee should be, Vaishnav K. So all practical tips, how we should regulate ourselves. This purport, if we make our life mission, we will go back to Godhead. Let's read it. Every line is a pearl. In the beginning, no one can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional service. Here, bhakta means one who does not hesitate to accept the reformative process for becoming a bhakta. First, hope. Because ye dono padke soche, are yaar, you see all the qualities that are mentioned in the previous thing here. Faithful. Respectful to spiritual master, non-envious, friendly to all living entities, eager to render service with faith and sincerity, perfectly cleansed, like that, develop detachment and so on. These are very high qualities. But here Prabhupada is giving us hope. Bhakta means one who does not hesitate to become bhakta. In order to become a devotee of the Lord, one has to accept a spiritual master and inquire from him how to progress in devotional service. To serve a devotee, to chant the holy name according to certain counting methods, to worship a deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita from a realized person, and to live in a secret place where devotional service is not disturbed, are first out of the 64 devotional items for making progress. One has to accept these five chief activities, is called a devotee. Now, second level. Don't be happy saying that, I have accepted reformative process, I am devotee from today. No. Second level. Take initiation. Third level, all the 64 angas, primarily focusing on the 5 angas. Next, one should be prepared to offer the necessary respect and honor to spiritual master. He should not be unnecessarily envious of his god brothers. The most difficult process. It is more important than honoring, giving respect and honor to spiritual master, is honoring one's god brothers and being non-envious of one's god brothers. Rather, if a god brother is more enlightened and advanced in Krishna consciousness, one should accept him as almost equal to the spiritual master, and one should be happy to see such god brother advance in Krishna consciousness. Right now it may sound very nice, right? Because all the god brothers we have are senior to us. Right? So it may seem very easy, but after 20 years, it becomes, you'll see, this fellow was in Vidyapit class with me. And half of the time I used to wake him up. He used to be sleeping, sitting next to me. And today, he has become so empowered. If he speaks one word, people become devotees. What is this? So that will happen. So then, a devotee should always be very kind to general public in instructing Krishna consciousness, because that is the only solution for getting out of the clutches of Maya. That is real humanitarian work, for it is a way to show mercy to other people who need it very badly. The word shushushabhirataya indicates a person who faithfully engages in serving the spiritual master. One should give personal service of all kinds of comforts to spiritual master. A devotee who does so is also a bona fide candidate for taking this instruction. The word bahir jata viragaya means a person who has developed detachment from external and internal material propensities. Bahir and Jata, internal, Viragaya. Not only is he detached from activities which are not connected to Krishna consciousness, but he should be internally averse to the material way of life. Such a person should be non-envious and should think of the welfare of all living entities, not only of human beings, But all living entities other than human beings, the word shauchaye means one who is cleansed both externally and internally. To become actually cleansed externally, internally, one should chant the holy name of the Lord Hare Krishna or Vishnu constantly. The word diyata means that knowledge of Krishna consciousness should be offered by the spiritual master. The spiritual master must not accept a disciple who is not qualified. He should not be professional and should not accept disciples for monetary gains. Of course, this is not for all of us right now. The bona fide spiritual master must see the bona fide qualities of a person whom he is going to initiate. An unworthy person should not be initiated. A spiritual master should train his disciple in such a way so in the future only the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be the dearmost goal of his life. In these two verses, the qualities of a devotee are fully explained. One who has actually developed all the qualities listed in these verses is already elevated to the post of a devotee. If he has not developed all these qualities, he still has to fulfill these conditions in order to become a perfect devotee. So right now we may be devotees, but we are not perfect yet. Like that. Ya idam shunaya damba shraddhaya purushas sakrit yova bhidatte machittah sahyeti padavim chame. Anyone who once meditates upon me with faith and affection, who hears and chants about me, surely goes back home, back to Godhead. Haribo. So write your exam nicely. Because that is your meditation on Lord Kapila. So you'll go back to him, back to Godhead. Thus ends the Bhaktivinoda purports of the third canto, 32nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Entanglement in Fruitive Activity. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki.